A morning arrives in November, a leafless, birdless coming of winter morning, when she cannot rouse herself to exclaim, "Oh my, it's fruitcake weather." And when that happens, I know it. A message saying so merely confirms a piece of news some secret vein had already received, severing from me an irreplaceable part of myself.
This is the Quality News Network. A large portion of the U.S. today is suffering through fierce winter weather. The Plain States are being pounded by a blizzard, more than a foot of snow and roaring winds. Major highways in six states have been shut down. Schools, businesses, government offices, and airports are closed. The Colorado governor has declared a state of emergency. The Pacific Northwest is hunkered down in anticipation of yet another major storm. Last week, 14 people died in the worst maelstrom in a decade. Thousands of customers remain without power. In Oregon, the miserable weather has contributed to authorities' decision to abandon the search for two climbers who had been missing on Mount Hood for more than a week. In Iraq, top war commanders are telling the new defense secretary they disapprove of President Bush's plans to increase the number of U.S. forces in Iraq. Some ground troops, however, favor the idea. In Najaf, one of Iraq's most powerful clerics, Murtada al-Sadr, is meeting today with delegates from seven Shia groups in Iraq's parliament. The delegates are expected to ask al-Sadr's blessing for a one-month ceasefire with rival Sunnis. In Baghdad, men lined up to enlist in the country's security forces today were hit by a suicide bomber. At least 14 died, 22 were wounded. A roadside bomb in Baghdad killed one U.S. soldier and wounded three others. Two Marines died in combat today in the volatile Anbar province. That brings the total U.S. military deaths there this month to 69. In Turkmenistan, the country's brutal dictator died today of a heart attack. The U.S. considers the country an important ally because it borders Afghanistan. In Somalia, second day of vicious fighting between government forces and Ethiopian invaders. Heavy casualties have been reported. U.S. troops are on the ground training Somalia government troops. In France, a television reporter filmed himself smuggling plastic explosives onto a French airliner and box cutters onto an American passenger plane, Delta, for a documentary on lax security procedures. The filmmaker also packed his luggage with plastic explosives in a suitcase screened by security officials. You're listening to Quality News Network. Science and business are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Hueyhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why I got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps, because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both.
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
A Komodo dragon in a Chester, England zoo is about to provide a virgin Christmas birth. Flora, who has never mixed with others of her species, has fertilized her own 8 eggs. Zoologists say it's the first time parthenogenesis has been seen in the world's largest lizards. Nutrisystem says its revenues tripled during the first 9 months of 2006. The weight loss company credits strong product sales by men. The FDA has approved a head cooling cap designed to eliminate brain damage in newborns who suffer from a lack of oxygen. Cooling the body decreases the brain's need for oxygen. 5,000 to 9,000 babies in the U.S. are born each year with the problem. 20% die, 25% suffer brain damage. Pharmaceutical giant Bristol Myers Squibb announced today it would pay nearly $500 million to settle federal investigations into their marketing practices and drug prices. Rite Aid posted a 4% increase in quarterly revenues, beating Wall Street estimates. America's third largest drugstore chain credited heavy pharmacy sales. A one-time boost from consolidation of its retailers boosted American Greetings quarterly earnings. As a result, the greeting card maker's shares rose 3.6% today. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.55 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. You can find more at Quality News Network.
With Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Ho, 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 ho.
A very, very happy holiday season to you. This will be the Friday program, in addition to being the program in advance of Christmas. I'm Bob Kincaid. Right next to me, as you can probably hear her personing the phones, I can't look at my lovely wife and say that she's manning anything. Personing the phones is my lovely wife, Agnes, producing the program.
Happy holidays.
And you too. Of course, you know, you guys know Agnes. She's the heart and soul of this operation. Okay, we're off to a really good start. Now, this is I do hope you all have a very good Christmas weekend. It looks like it's going to be a very busy one for me tomorrow, because you can't keep fresh oysters in the shell like fresh oysters in the shell for just too very long. So it's been, you know what? This is just the way life is for us. Everything is an adventure. In this particular instance, trying to catch up with a few dozen Blue Point oysters on the half or in the shell has been very similar to a drug deal. Yeah, well, okay, you know, you meet me down at the corner. Bring cash. Okay. Now, we've had, just to give you an idea, because I'm a foodie. Christmas morning will be a breakfast of smoked salmon on dill rye toast points with sour cream, capers, and finely sliced onions. Lunch will be oysters bienville, and it's just yummy. And then the big ticket item, I had to speak to my loan officer earlier today. A standing rib of beef. And that's, you know, prime rib. Or, you know, that's the American tradition, is to slice it in a big, thick hunk. But the real beauty of it is to slice it super thin. And we'll have grilled asparagus that have been tossed in lemon juice and olive oil and salt and pepper and garlic. And we'll put those out on the grill and char them nicely. And because it seems to be the absolute hit of the holiday season of the last few years, a banana pudding made with creme brulee for dessert. Now, for those of you who understand that Agnes is an overworked and underpaid producer, phone screener, and overall Den Mother of the Horn. I want you to understand something. We also we have another little tradition in the family that says on Christmas morning I get to begin plying Agnes with champagne. And more particularly, mimosas or Kir Royales.
Now, Bob, you need to tell everyone I don't drink.
I know you don't. That's what I said. You don't drink. But I get to ply you with booze on Christmas. It's my little Christmas present.
Is this a good thing? I mean, I don't...
Yes, it's a very good thing.
I don't think being plied with booze on Christmas, especially before supper's cooked, is a good thing for
anyone. Yeah, but she's usually singing by noon, so that's a good thing.
Actually, I'm dancing by noon. I'm singing by 6, and it clears the house out in just a moment.
But, you know, a little cheap champagne, a little orange juice. And you know, so all of you who send all those emails saying, you know, please get Agnes some rest. Please let Agnes relax. Agnes is going to relax on Christmas Day as I get to play Santa Claus Christmas Chef.
Oh, you didn't tell me that they send you emails telling me to get rest. And they, oh, thank you all. That is so sweet.
They do. They do. So, I mean, just to give you an idea how the thing's going to shape up. And a bit of a program note, Agnes and I have given it considerable thought, and we've also talked to other powers that be. And so we won't be on the air Monday. And we're also not going to be on the air Tuesday or Wednesday. We try, except for technical difficulties and major emergencies, we try not to miss. But we're going to take a little extended break for the Christmas holiday. We'll be back Thursday evening and pick it up and get going again. And then, of course, no show on New Year's night, but certainly on the 2nd. And after that, it's back to another year of kicking ass and taking names. Okay? At least I hope that's how it all works out. So tonight, if you want to share your thoughts on what Christmas is going to be about or what it means for you, wherever you are certainly welcome to do so. The phone number is 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, and email to bob@headonradio.com, and email to Agnes at Agnes, A-G-N-E-S, at headonradio.com, because I'm getting a little tired of fielding her fan mail. Oh, the green-eyed monster is out!
Bob, you never told me I had fan mail.
You have fan mail, dear.
Thank you again. But please don't make him jealous. You know, somebody's got to love him best.
Nobody does.
Yes, we all love you, Bob.
So, I'll tell you what, let's start out with a phone call real quick. Our good friend Susan's on the line from Columbia City, Oregon. Susan, happy holidays.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, we can say that now that the Christmas Nazis don't have a gun to our head.
Yes. Perhaps I should have sent that recipe to you instead of Agnes. I sent a special recipe to Agnes. You might get her to show it to you.
Okay, I will.
Yeah. She thought it was pretty cool. Anyway... Christmas traditions in my family.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of the family I grew up in was really, really distant. You know, it was not an emotionally involved family. But we did have one tradition, and everybody would drop whatever they were doing or wherever they were doing it. And, come through some of the most god-awful weather to go have Christmas at my mother's house. And that meant her 5 kids, their kids, their spouses, so on and so forth. And there was this big... And it always happened on Christmas Eve. And then she would... the next day, she would cook dinner, and one of the nicer parts of the tradition was, as long as he was alive... After dinner, my father insisted on doing the dishes. The tradition is, well, I spent yesterday, part of yesterday, and I'm going to be spending the rest of tonight scanning photo, family photographs, because my mother died this last summer, so we're kind of, the family's more or less fracturing.
Yeah. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
That's one of the beauties of all the home technology we have. Faded photographs can be brought back to life and preserved indefinitely.
Yeah, what I'm doing is I'm scanning them, and then I'm going to burn them into a disk and give them to everybody.
Wonderful.
What I wanted to say was the traditions that I'm putting in place of some of the quote, family things are acquired family.
Indeed.
Family on this network, family on Nova M. And a lot of, you know, some people would say, well, that's just bad. But then again,
I don't think so at all. No.
Because you and Agnes and John, you are people that I can relate to.
Well, I forget who the person was who, there's a very famous old line that friends are the family we pick for ourselves.
Yeah. Exactly, and I have to, it's sad to say it, but my mother and I got along best when she was in her state and I was in mine. We just had that type of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just, you know, it just never got any better, and, you know, that's just the way it was. But, you know, the memories I have of Christmas were always some of the best. Because there was always, that was one of the few times the family came together. Even though, you know, I haven't been a Christian in decades, but I observed that because it was a family holiday.
Exactly, and it does no harm to observe. I don't think. I don't adhere to any organized form of Christianity, and in fact, my biggest gripe with organized Christianity is that the be all and end all of their faith is the brutal and bloody murder of that incredibly good and decent man.
Yeah.
And for me, it's the lessons are in his life.
And, you know...
And not in his death.
Yeah, and that plus the churches... And it's not just Christianity, it's Islam, it's Judaism. They all had, or still have, a philosophy of convert or die.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I was in a discussion... about the difference between fundamentalist Christians, if you would call them that. I don't think they are. Fundamentalist Christians and fundamentalist Muslims. And the whole point is that, you know, really between the two, it's the difference between taste great and less filling. You know, not only is it all beer, it's all the same beer.
Yeah, the only difference is the label.
Even the label is. I mean, you know, that you remember the Taste Great Less Filling ads from Miller Lite?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the brawling table and chair throwing beer hall, just knocked down. Tastes great, less filling, and, you know, people wind up with black eyes. It's all the same beer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all the same monotheism.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fundamentalists would probably... enjoy the heck out of reading the Book of Maryam out of the Quran, because there's information about Jesus there that they never even pondered.
Uh-huh. One of the things that attracted me to my religion was one of the basic tenets of it is you have to practice complete and total tolerance to everybody.
Yeah.
And that means I can go into a high mass, I can go to temple, so on and so forth, and it's not a contradiction of my religion, because I am practicing tolerance and respect for for what those religions stand for in the ideal.
Exactly.
In the practicality, it's a little bit different.
Well, that's true, because, hey, you want the sacred cookie? Susan, thank you so much for all you've shared.
Thank you, and thank you for you, both you and Agnes, for all that you have given me, because you have made my experience with not only with Liberal Talk Radio, but also the whole, my whole, I don't know how you would want to put it, but you have enriched me a great deal.
As you have us, and we thank you for your efforts on the website, working on the blog, doing all the show posts. It means a lot, because we're trying to do something here that is truly and genuinely different from anything else that's out there. And I'm not naming names or anything, but we have invited people to participate, not in myriad ways. And you found a wonderful place where you're helping out, and our good friend Gene helps out, and the whole thing was born out of the idea that we can put something together that will be professional, that will be quality, and that will be enjoyable and accessible to anybody who wants to access it through a variety of means.
Mm-hmm.
And having the volunteerism that you and others show makes it seem that maybe we're on the right track.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed doing it, and
no, we're going to take a little break, and then, like I said, we'll come back at the front end of January, hell-bent for leather, and I guess that's kind of a rotten way to talk on the last show before Christmas. But here, let me just make it even worse. We'll come back with the meat axe in our hands.
Oh, yeah. Hey, let's face it. Lizzie Borden, did have her excuse, you know.
Yeah, she was edgy, Lizzie.
Anyway, to you and Agnes and your family and your father, blessed be, and have a wonderful day.
You too, and blessings upon you.
Blessed be, Susan.
Blessed be, Agnes.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Keep it rolling on to our good friend Jim, calling from not too awfully far from here. Jim, welcome to the program. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
How are you this evening?
Okay, I'm fine. I'm hearing, are you there, Bob?
Yeah, I'm right here.
I'm sorry, I must have phased out on you. I don't know what happened, but anyway.
It's okay, it happens to the best of us.
It does, it really does. As a matter of fact, I even decided to wear red jockey shorts over jeans and go to the Kroger. And I said, innerwear looks good over outerwear. I think it looks smart.
Hey, look, if Madonna can wear a corset for outerwear, right.
But, I just did it for the hell of it. Put a Santa Claus hat, and everybody looked at me like I was crazy, and I just enjoyed it.
Yeah, but you know what? You've made their holiday, Jim. They're going to be sitting. They'll be sitting around the Christmas table. Did I ever tell you about the story? The story of the guy I saw in Kroger's with the red jockey. And they'll talk. And it'll go down in generations. You've just made someone's life.
Well, I hope I did. I mean, there's not a whole lot going on around here, but there's something. I hear what you're saying as far as. And we have our differing views about religion, and we're not going to get into that tonight. We're not going to...
Shucks, no.
Okay, Christmas. But there's something that gives me an awful lot of comfort, and it's one of my favorite Christmas hymns. And basically, you don't hear this very often. It's God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, but it's the third stanza. And it says here, "Fear not," said the angel, "let nothing you affright. This day is born a Savior of the pure virgin bright, to free all those who trust in him from Satan's power and might, of tidings of comfort and joy."
That is one of my favorite carols as well, because it's so...
I accept that blindly, wholeheartedly. I have no reservations about any of it.
Well, that's how it has to be done.
And it's the Apostles' Creed for me.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something for somebody else, so be it. But that's just my thing. And, you know, that's what I elect to believe in. And, you know, I'm not cafeteria. I take the whole thing.
Well, you know, it's supposed to be taken on faith.
And that's the only thing, the only hope of the world we have. Because everything in this world is so temporary, so transitory. And I believe that one day there will be a new world, in which there will be no more pain, no more suffering, no more pain, for all the former things to pass away.
And
I'll guarantee you one thing, and I believe this wholeheartedly, you are situation like, for example, on the sloping decks of the Titanic, or if you're in a foxhole, or if you're in a hospital bed, then I believe some of those stuff would be mighty comforting to you.
Well, and I don't disagree with that in the least.
That's what it means to me. And, you know,
there's enough pain to go around in this world, Jim. Whatever takes a little bit of the pain away is okay by me.
Well, you know, that here's the thing. It takes it all away. It basically does, because how long are you going to live?
No guarantees.
And, you know, life is, like I say, very short, very transitory. And, you know, all paths of glory lead but to the grave. And beyond there, it's something to hold on to, because when you come to that point and you have to jump in, to that precipice or cross that huge divide, you want to know that someone's going to grab you by the shoulder or by the arm and teach you how to fly.
Indeed, indeed. Well, Jim, what's on the agenda for Christmas?
Two drop-ins, and I'm cooking now. I'm looking at about 1,400 or 1,500 white lights outside, plus the whole place is like a Hallmark shop. I'm one of those Department 56 freaks. I have every building from Windsor Castle to the Houses of Parliament to the Empire State Building, Radio City, Victoria Station, and about 50 more all lit.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So it's just, you know, and I've had two fat cats who are sitting in their leather chair with bandanas on, and they are right happy that it's Christmas.
Well, Boo Boo the studio cat is back here happily ensconced on top of the telephone processor.
And right above the TV set is a statue of Our Lady of Lourdes, St. Nicholas, and the Archangel St. Michael.
Well, it sounds like a very, very Christmassy scene.
It is indeed, and I thank God that he's let me stay here one more year. It'll probably be my last, but that's okay.
We're hoping
the hell out of this one.
We're certainly hoping that it won't be, Jim. And, we hope you have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. Enjoy the camaraderie of those with whom you get together.
Okay.
And have a blast with all that cooking, because it's just being in the kitchen about this time of year is loads of fun.
Hey, I've heard about you being in the kitchen. I don't think I'd let you in my kitchen.
What do you mean?
I've heard. I'm one of those cooks. I'm real anal about it. I clean as I go.
Oh, so do I. I'm religious about it.
Oh, okay.
I can't.
It's funny how people just tell lies.
No, they do. Lies, all lies. My big problem's presentation. I can't necessarily make it pretty, but I can make it taste doggone good.
Oh, I love to do that. That's fun too. Presentation's everything.
So, you know, I'm picking up the standing rib tomorrow, and we'll let it air dry in cool temperatures for a couple of days and concentrate the flavors, and then into the oven it goes on Monday.
Right. Oh, by the way, our friend Mr. O'Brien was calling Mr. Ray Hall a terrorist twice.
No, Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, then he had
sleazy punk.
Some of his people on there, and they were talking about making derogatory comments about the Democrats and some of the ones that have been elected, and even earlier when Senator Johnson was, you know, really, literally at death's door. They were praying for him to die. And I thought to myself, you know, Nikki Dale, you had it right. These people are just plain evil.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, that's, I was so proud of him when he said that, because it's something that I've been kind of hollering for several years now, and it's nice to you know, it's not something that you come to joyfully or blithely or lightly, but at some point in time you have to realize that the people we're dealing with on the opposite side of all of this are evil. I mean, it's the only rational explanation for the way that they behave.
And how in the name of Almighty God did someone who would call themselves any form of Christian to pray for the death of another human being?
But see, Jim, that's the thing. They do that all the time. I don't know if... Do you remember Pat Robertson telling America to pray for the death of Supreme Court justices?
No, I don't remember that.
Sure. I mean, that's a regular staple of fundamentalism. If you don't like them, pray that God will smite them. And you know that is contrary. It's not just contrary today or in this season. It's contrary all year long.
Of course. Well, these people who want to do that, they might get a surprise. God just might turn His wrath on them.
Wait, I got a list of people I'm waiting on the lightning bolts for, Jim.
I mean, you know, he is not that. I don't think that sort of thing makes him very happy. I cannot speak for him, but I don't think that sort of behavior makes him very happy at all, is to wish harm and evil on your fellow human being just because you have political differences. Now, you know, if somebody's trying to kill you, and if you or him, and you're in a battlefield situation or any type of defense situation or whatever, well, anything goes, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But for a man in a bed in a hospital after a massive stroke caused by no type of conduct of his own, it was a genital thing purely. And for them to say that and to make statements like, you know, divine intervention is about to occur, it literally made my blood run cold.
They draw God like a gun, don't they, Jim?
Well, I mean, I don't think that, yeah, and that's not right. That's just absolutely not right. And these people have no concept of what they're talking about, and they have done so much to hurt organized religion, and they have turned so many people against it, and I really hate that. I really hate that, because true Christians and real Christians don't act and feel that way.
No.
Do not.
No, they don't. And that tells us a lot about the people who do act that way. Jim, have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope you and your family do too, and you take care of yourself, and a happy new year to all of you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take
all right.
care.
Bye
now. You too. And on to our good friend Charlie Sullivan. Hey, Charlie, how you doing?
Hi, Bob. How are you doing today?
You know, I'm trying to just sort of deal with the Christmas stress and focus on the happy stuff.
Well, that's a good approach to it, I think. How's the weather in your neck of the woods today?
I wouldn't call it Christmassy. It's probably maybe 58, 60 degrees, sort of gray and icky.
Oh, you're a lot warmer than we are over here.
The brutal stuff hasn't started yet. I think it may have skirted around us and hit you guys in the Eastern Panhandle.
Yeah, it's very chilly and damp and rainy. It's not real Christmassy. I was out feeding the horses earlier, and it's just kind of a quagmire out in the pasture right now. Not a lot of fun being out there in that, but, you know, you have to go out there and take care of the animals.
Mm-hmm. But, I don't think we're going to get anything approaching a white Christmas or anything like that. Of course, you know, this has nothing to do with the changing nature of the climate or anything, because that's all a big joke. It's a liberal means to try to attain communism in our time. Oh God, there I go. See, I've been very nice for 30 minutes and it's all worn out now. See what you do?
All it took was a call from me. You know, have that effect on people.
But moreover. I got a stack of stories here that, you know, I sort of themed up tonight's show because the idea is that the Christmas story itself entails a very, very poor man and a very, very poor woman in socially dire circumstances, what with the fact that they're not married and she's all pregnant and stuff, and they can't even get a decent place to spend the night with her in labor. You know, is it any wonder, and I don't know that I've ever heard anybody talk about this, Charlie, but is it any wonder that Jesus spent his adult life talking about why we ought not treat the poor like crap?
Well, to me, you know, that was the gist of the, you know, I'm not a Christian either, Bob. I consider myself a born-again pagan, in fact.
Well, I joke about being a Frisbeterian.
If there,
you know, we believe when you die, your soul goes up on the roof and you can't get it down.
There you go.
Sorry.
But, you know, I think that's the gist of the teachings of Christ, you know, and I think that's the part of Christianity that's so overlooked in this culture of ours, you know, that's so materialistic and, you know, money and wealth and accumulation of property are looked at as virtuous. And, you know, in fact, they're the very opposite of the very things that, to the best of my knowledge, you know, Christ spoke against.
Well, he spends a whole lot more. Well, the religionistas in this country spend a lot more time talking about stuff that he never said anything about than they do talking about the stuff that he did. And he was born in dirt poverty, and he at the moment of his birth was treated like garbage. Put the baby over there where the cattle eat. See if you can keep the cattle out of the baby. I mean, that's what a manger is. We forget that kind of thing.
It sounds very much like the way we treat the poor in this country. You
know? Yeah. And so, you know, he develops a theory, if you want to call it that, or a mindset that says we've got to, we're poor and we have to start out by treating each other better than they treat us. And that the change rises from there.
Well, the thing is about the right wingers, Bob, is they act as if they have a monopoly on God. And if you look at the life of Christ, and again, if you listen to his teachings, he was basically a very, dare I say, liberal, progressive, even a socialist.
Well, how can you see him as anything but? You know, it was the conservatives that killed him.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
He was killed by the if bear in mind, if the gospel accounts are entirely correct, he was killed by the entrenched powers of his day. You've got Pontius Pilate, who was a brutal governor. Who at best, if you buy the accounts, sort of says, well, you know, he's one of you deal with him, and punts him off on the Jewish governing body. But a lot of people think that that's a way of establishing the blood guilt and all of that, and I think there's probably some truth to it. But moreover, he was. It's a life about transformative change, because the idea of love your neighbor did not obtain, as far as I can tell, in any of the philosophies of the ancient world at that time. The idea of thinking about others before you think of yourself, you know, it had certainly taken root in India and was moving eastward with Buddhism, but it was the Roman world, the Greek world, the Egyptian? No! Everything is utterly self-centered in all of those worlds. And so it does become an absolutely radical, transformative notion among the poor, the poor classes of occupied Palestine. You know, I refer to him as Yeshua the Palestinian, because Nazareth is in Palestine. There was a recent survey asking the American people, who lives in Bethlehem? And they thought it was a part of Israel, and that it was inhabited by Israelis.
Well, I'm not surprised at that.
You know, this is deadly ignorance on our part, because it winds up getting other people dead.
Yeah.
You can, to this day, you could walk up to a conservative and say, "Tell me about Christianity in Saddam's Iraq," and you and I both know probably what you'd get. Oh, Saddam was a brutal dictator. He probably gassed any Christians that were in Iraq. But in fact, one of the oldest Christian communities on the face of the planet was in Baghdad. And we slaughtered them. Saddam didn't slaughter them. We shock and awed them. We bombed them. We've run them out of the country. We've created this sectarian Muslim chaos, and the Christian community there has been driven into exile. And literally one of the oldest Christian communities on earth. And Saddam didn't do that. We did that.
Yeah, and, you know, that was a very cradle of civilization as well. I mean, it just... It's just appalling what we've done.
I remember seeing the photographs where some Marine, you know, had spray-painted Semper Fi on the walls of Babylon.
Oh, wow.
And he didn't even spell it right. He spelled it Semper Fi, F-E. You know, wrong on so many levels. You know, we rushed in to guard the oil ministry and the Baghdad Museum, and the Division of Antiquities, or Ministry of Antiquities, got looted. There were cuneiform tablets that were just smashed back to their original dust in the streets.
Well, it shows what our priorities over there really are. You know, there was no concern about the culture or the history of that beautiful country. You know, our concern was to grab up that oil, to privatize it, and to accrue wealth to the already wealthy in this country. And that's what Iraq is all about.
Well, it seems like more at this season than any other, it seems fitting that we contemplate what in the world we're doing over there, Charlie. I mean, would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
And especially in light of this business about wanting to surge. You know, why does everything they do with war have to have a sexual sound to it?
Yeah, George Carlin did some interesting skits about that. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, but... You know, all the phallic symbols that go into war and war talk, and you know, there's really a lot of truth.
We can't pull out.
Yeah, we pulled out prematurely in Vietnam, and look what happened. You know,
yeah,
there's all these sexual connotations, and you know, it's one of those. I think it's one of those things that have to do with male-dominated culture. You know, we would be so much better off probably if we had more of a matriarchy, more so than a patriarchy. There might be less of that. I don't know.
Well, this business with the surge, and you know how much, you know, there's not a lot of coverage out there. I was looking at a couple of essays today. Every general you ask, for once, is standing up. We've talked about that two or three nights in a row now on this show. Are there any generals that have the nerve to stand up to George Bush now and understand that he's not making their careers, he's ending them? And general after general after general after general is saying, you know, 30, 35, 40, 50,000 more troops in Baghdad is not a good idea. Surging is not going to work. And the media is, you know, strictly crickets.
Well, it's pretty much what Lyndon Johnson did with Vietnam. You know, they just threw more and more people into the meat grinder, and all it did really was raise the death toll higher. It isn't going to solve anything in Iraq either.
Well, I don't see it, and yet at the same time, I've been watching some cons and Bush voters and things like that, and they can't wait to get to war in Iran. And it really, while I oppose any idea of a draft whatsoever, there's a part of me that when I see these conservatives hollering for us to start the bombing on Iran, draft them all. If they want to attack Iran, let them do the attacking. Because the instant that you explain to the conservatives that they'd have to be the ones who actually fought the war, we'd never fight another one.
Well, that's exactly true, and that's part of the problem. You know, I talked last time when I was on the horn with you about my conservative sister, and you know, she was telling me about a coworker of hers whose son has served 3 tours of duty over there, and you know, he signed up for another one recently. And you know, my response to her was, well, you know, good for her, and you know, if you're so much in favor of this war, why don't you have your son sign up as well? You know, if this is such a good thing, why don't you sign him up and have him go over there and you know, occupy Iraq, and you know, but she doesn't want to do that.
Yeah, somehow that wasn't quite the same good idea.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like this person is just so proud of her country, and her son is so proud to work under the Commander-in-Chief George W. Bush, who really couldn't manage a hot dog stand, to be honest, let alone a war. you know, that she was just so proud that her son was going over there again and again and again. And, you know, it's just really sick.
Well, you mentioned the hot dog stand. I remember, I'm a little bit of a sports fan. The Maverick owner of the Dallas Mavericks is a guy named Mark Cuban. I don't know if he's conservative or liberal or what. As rich as he is, he's probably conservative. But at one point, he got after the NBA officials and said that they weren't competent to work at a Dairy Queen. And he got called on it. And that guy had the guts to go and spend a day learning to put that little swirl on that stupid little cone. He actually went and worked at a Dairy Queen. That is so far removed from anything that you could expect of this administration. It's honest to God, I've complained on this program for a couple of weeks now about having a hard time getting into the Christmas spirit. And you know what? It's probably a cop-out on my part, but there's a reason for it. And a lot of the reason's the damn war, Charlie. I mean, it just is.
Well, I think a lot of us are feeling that way, Bob. It just, you know, it casts a dark pall over everything. And, you know, if you understand the premises of the war, you understand that it, you know, it was predicated upon lies, and it's not about what we're told it's about. And if you know that and understand that, I mean, I'm sure, like me, you probably go around with a chip on your shoulder the size of the world. I mean, I'm an angry man.
Yes.
And I have a hard time concealing that anger. And I have difficulty concealing it with people who don't have a clue. I have difficulty concealing it with the ultra-conservatives who think this is a good thing, that this is a religious thing, and that we're doing God's work. And I just have a difficult time dealing with those people and being civil. I don't think they're worthy of civil treatment.
Well, and not to be too playgroundy and nanny-nanny boo-boo, but how civil have they been with us?
Exactly.
How civil was the 109th Congress? How civil was the 108th?
Well,
when they were ramrodding these bills through, and if a Democratic senator dare raise his voice and said, "Oh yeah, I'm not so sure," screw you. You know, if you dare say another word, we'll eliminate the filibuster forever. We'll go nuclear on you.
Well, you know, it's really sad. I wish the Democrats would grow some testicles, frankly. You know, I wish they would fight the Republicans tooth and nail the way the Republicans fight them. You know, they know what they want. They want everything. They want it all, and they go after it. They go right for the jugular. I wish the Democrats would be a little less civil at times and just really get after it with them. You know, we need people who are able and willing, who perhaps even enjoy a good fight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You have to roll your sleeves up there. You've got to get in there, and you've got to bloody their noses. That's the only thing
we
understand.
That's the only way you can deal with a bully.
That's exactly right.
And because these are schoolyard tactics that they used, and they've got to be met with the same kind of resolve. There's an opinion piece by Bob Geiger. He's been on this show over at opednews.com today, called referring to the Snow-Landrieu bipartisan initiative. And he warns in the first paragraph, nausea alert, do not read this on a full stomach if you're a progressive who's had it up to your eyeballs with some elected Democrats regularly accepting prison shower room Ned Beatty and deliverance treatment from Republicans and then meekly saying, "Thank you, sir, may I have some more?"
Yes.
And he lays out, and maybe I'll get into it a little bit later, this agreement that Mary Landrieu, Democrat, and Olympia Snowe, the so-called moderate Republican, have put together to try to hamstring the Senate out of being able to get anything done on the Democratic agenda.
Well, you know, I listened to the show with Dennis Kucinich, and of course I was interested in his ideas, and I think one of the things that we have to do to get out of this morass in Iraq is to really defund the war.
That's the only answer, Charlie.
And then I see, you know, I read comments like, you know, I hear what Nancy Pelosi says and Harry Reid and all the establishment here. And I even hear that Barney Frank referred to Dennis Kucinich's ideas as, quote, silly. And it just makes me boil over. And I really have very little, I have no hope that they are going to defund this war, Bob. I just think they're going to capitulate, kowtow. And we're going to have to make them pay for that.
Well, I can't, for the life of me, I can't understand why, Charlie, because supposedly these people think eat, breathe, and sleep politics, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, do they not realize that to put, you know, they're planning, the Democrats are planning on having the White House in 2008. I mean, that's, you know, because there's no clear front runner in the Republicans, and there's an actual shot. There's no there's no succeeding vice president running for the first time in 50 years. And the Democrats realize that they can have the White House. And yet at the same time, they are willing to let that president go in and inherit George Bush's war, which is exactly what the Republican Party wants. The Republican Party will gladly sacrifice the White House for 4 years. The Bush family in particular will sacrifice the White House for 4 years because that puts Jebby in the catbird seat to run in 2012.
Yeah, and the Democrats can be in control when everything comes crashing down, as it is going to happen.
Right. I mean, the Democratic president who inherits this war inherits disaster. It'll be almost impossible to get anything done, and they will have to govern from a position of weakness.
The thing is, Bob, you know, I think the people who are in Congress and certainly the people who are in the White House really believe that we are working for them. We are their servants. They've got it all backwards. And they're running the country as if that's the way it should be, you know, that they dictate policy and we carry it out. You know, we are the cannon fodder. And that's the way the plutocrats have always treated the working class people of this country. They treat them with disdain. And, you know, they pay homage to things like the military and military service. And they take advantage of every photo op. And you hear all these military people saying great things about George Bush. I mean, I've had a lot of debates with some of them. And yet, what is George Bush saying about those people when he puts them in harm's way, knowing that there is no threat to America? That is just utter contempt for those people. And that's the kind of contempt the ruling elite have always felt for working class people. And that's primarily who is in the military. It's the poor working stiff.
Well, sure it is. And when it's all over and their usefulness is ended, they get treated like Republicans ordinarily treat injured workers.
Exactly.
Out of sight, out of mind is their best hope.
That's exactly.
And if they can keep us workaday Americans from thinking about them, all the better. And then the next thing you know, you get a Neil Bortz out there saying homeless veterans want to be homeless.
Yes.
Because it's libertarian principles.
Isn't it incredible?
Oh, it makes me want to put my my fist through the dashboard every time I'm driving along and I hear that crap on the radio.
Well, you know, I just cannot bear to listen to any kind of mainstream news or media anymore. I cannot do it. I just do not have the stomach for it. When I hear that whiny voice of George Bush and his manly strutting up to the podium and so forth, it's just more than I can bear. I get so angry, I just see red. I have to turn it off or I'm going to put my fist through something. You know, I just can't bear it.
Well, that's why we built this.
Exactly. And, you know, if you know someone is lying to you, and that's what the mainstream media is, you understand that they're just putting forth the stories that the administration wants out there. I mean, they may as well be the state-owned media, because that's exactly what they are. They're just spouting the company line, and there's very little truth in it. And why waste your time with someone you know is lying to you? Why give them your time?
Well, you know, our friend Joe Vecchio, who hosts on Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2, frequently uses that wonderful old line from the Soviet Union, "There is no truth in Pravda and no news in Izvestia." And that's kind of that's where we've gotten to. In the, you know, I don't know if the United States and his history or whatever has fully contemplated what the fall, the collapse of the Soviet Union meant to us, because it seems like all of the worst things about the Soviet Union we have inherited and we have co-opted for ourselves. I mean, is there anything more Soviet seeming than the torture bill and the elimination, the wholesale elimination of a plainly stated constitutional principle enshrined at Article 1, Section 9 that says you don't get rid of habeas corpus without a darn good reason, and there's only two of them, invasion and rebellion. And we just, you know, it was just gone at the stroke of a pen. How Soviet is it that that we've got a leader who stands up and says, if you're calling Al-Qaeda, we want to know about it?
Well, you know, I think it's more than anything. It's like 1933 Nazi Germany. You know, I just see this as a rising police state. It's a fascist state. The people with money and property matter, and everyone else is supposed to be their servant. And to me, that's all the New World Order really is.
Well, that's it's yeah.
One great gulag.
And in fact, I've got a gulag story tonight. That's what. If I get to it, because you know, on this last broadcast night before Christmas, it might be worth, you know, if you really want to talk about the spirit of Christmas, it might be worth our time to contemplate what's happening to the people who live on the sad sorry fringes of society, like Jesus's mommy and daddy did. Where are they tonight? What's happening to them? And I've got a hair raising story.
Well, I hope you can get to that. That sounds very much worth doing.
Well, Charlie, I wish you and your wife and your entire extended family a very happy holiday. Rest, relax, get out of it what peace and tranquility you can. But by the same token, what I keep saying, bear in mind that, you know, that January the 1st is not very far away, and there's no downtime. If you're going to take a break, take it now, because it's going to be a matter of gasping a big old mouthful of air and sprinting as hard as we can from here on out.
Well, you've got that right, Bob. And, you know, I wish you and Agnes and all of the people in the Hit On Radio Network the very best. And, you know, it gives me hope when I hear these people calling in and I hear their intelligence, I hear their understanding, I hear their compassion, I hear their commitment. And it makes me feel good about knowing that there are people out there who still care, and people who get it, and people who are rolling up their sleeves and they're doing what they can.
It really does cut through the gloom of the contrived isolation, doesn't it, Charlie?
Well, it's the only antidote for despair. It really is. Action.
Well,
you have to get involved. Action. And that's the only thing that's going to make things better.
And it works in so many different directions. It energizes us. People take away good things from this program. You know, after our last conversations, I had emails talking about, you know, how much they enjoyed it. We can build this community, and we can energize each other, and we can provide a foundation of support and camaraderie. And
I think that's what it's about. And, you know, we can use this program, we can use this community as an organizing tool for action. And again, that's what is going to win the day in the end. It's going to be commitment to action.
Well, Charlie, have a great weekend.
Okay, Bob.
You take care. And, you know, I've got this vision of you guys at the Christmas dinner table, and I see you like flying bread.
Well, I don't start the fights, but I have no qualms about finishing them. So usually when I'm in the room, everybody's on their good behavior, because, you know, if they start it, yeah, I have no problems with jumping in there with both feet and saying, oh, boy, here we go, and just nail them.
go get them, Charlie.
I don't believe in being quiet about these things.
All right, you take care.
Okay, peace, Bob.
Peace to you, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, so we got a couple of lines left open if you want to jump in. Your thoughts this last show before Christmas, 877-443-2366. By special request, a little fun at Christmas.
The wife is missing, didn't ask for her permission. I'm wearing her clothes, her silk pantyhose, walking around in women's underwear. In the store, there's a teddy with little straps like spaghetti. It holds me so tight, like handcuffs at night, walking around in women's underwear.
In the office, there's a guy named Melvin. He pretends that I am Murphy Brown.
He'll say, are you ready? We'll say, whoa, man. Until the wife is out of town. Later on, if you wanna, we can dress like Madonna.
on some ice shade and join the parade. Walking around in women's underwear. Lacy dreams. Miss her. Didn't ask permission. Wearing her clothes. Silk pantyhose. Walking around.
This is the Quality News Network. Tomorrow, President Bush will gather with Defense Secretary Robert Gates, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley. The Camp David meeting will focus on the President's possible new strategy in the Iraq War. Wrapping up his first week on the job, the new Defense Secretary Gates concluded his three-day trip to Iraq today. Gates spoke with military and political leaders there throughout the week. The leader of an umbrella organization for Iraqi insurgent groups is offering U.S. troops a one-month truce to allow the United States to withdraw all of its forces from Iraq and turn over its military bases, quote, to the Mujahideens of the Islamic State, end quote. West of Baghdad, five U.S. soldiers were killed in fighting, the military announced today. So far in December, 76 American troops have been killed in the Iraq War, making it one of the deadliest months as the total American death toll since the war began approaches 3,000. In Beijing, the six-nation talks about North Korea's nuclear program concluded without an agreement. After 5 days of discussion, North Korea still insisted that international sanctions be lifted first before it would dismantle its nuclear weapons. There was also no agreement on a date to resume the talks. The ceasefire in Gaza is still in place despite clashes between Hamas and rival factions. Fierce gun battles were fought in the region today, with one unconfirmed death. One witness reports that more than 2,000 bullets were fired in the first 10 minutes of fighting. In Ohio, a couple accused of forcing some of their 11 adopted special needs children to sleep in chicken wire cages was convicted today of endangerment and abuse. The parents had argued that they needed to keep some of the youngsters in enclosed beds rigged with alarms to protect them from themselves and each other. The couple faces 1 to 5 years in prison and a maximum fine of $10,000 for each of 4 felony counts when they are sentenced February 12th. New population estimates show Louisiana lost nearly 220,000 residents in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, almost 5% of its pre-storm population, and enough to possibly cost the Pelican State a congressional seat during the next reapportionment if the trend doesn't reverse. In Denver, thousands of stranded travelers are eagerly anticipating arriving at their final destinations as two of the airport's runways reopened this afternoon. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News next.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distant guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
The space shuttle Discovery landed about a half hour ago at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Rain and cloudy conditions kept the shuttle from landing at its earlier scheduled time. The shuttle spent 8 days at the International Space Station. Atlantis will be the next shuttle in space. That launch is scheduled for next March. The CDC says they've tracked down the source of the largest measles outbreak in a decade. 34 people fell ill in Indiana and Illinois last year. The source was a 17-year-old girl on a church trip traveling to a Romanian orphanage where she became infected. When she returned to the U.S., she shared more than snapshots with her church congregation. American Airlines boosted some of its domestic ticket prices by up to $40 per flight. Delta Airlines quickly matched the increase, and other competitors could soon follow. Officials for Americans say jet fuel costs are $15 higher than last year, prompting the increase. Charles Schwab Corporation is purchasing a 401k manager from Insurer Nationwide Financial Services for $115 million. The all-cash deal could be just the first in a series of Schwab acquisitions meant to reinvest a company windfall of $2.5 billion. Light sweet crude traded at $62.41 a barrel this hour, and at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 78 points at 12,343, the NASDAQ was down 15 points at 2401, and the S&P 500 was down 8 points at 1410. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Five and a half minutes after the hour. No Scroogery here. Unfortunately, we can't, you can't utterly disassociate yourself from reality. Because the reality, David Susskind's article from a few from back before the 2004 election, where the Bushistas said, you know, we make our own reality. Well, they've made it and they've foisted it upon us to the point that it makes it it does, at least for me. I don't know about you, but at least for me, it makes something like Christmas a little less special. So we're digging deep and reaching into the very core of our beings and trying to drag the ho-ho-hos to the forefront. All right, you smarties in the chat room, no ho-ho-ho jokes. To the phones, our good friend Andy calls from Wales. Hey, Andy, Merry Christmas.
Stuff it on the screen.
Yeah, okay. Then bah humbug to you, Andy.
Yeah, basically.
Are the poorhouses closed? Well, are there no more workhouses?
I'll tell you what is closed, the airport. I find it highly amusing because I disapprove of air travel intensely.
Trains are still rolling, though, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, the people are really annoyed, you know, Bob, because they're not able to fly from Heathrow, London, to Edinburgh.
Why do you need to do that?
Well, they're annoyed because they can't fly to Paris either. Just after we finish the high-speed rail link, and they want to fly.
Well, why is Heathrow closed?
Because of fog.
No, really, fog in London in December?
Yeah,
get out!
I was thinking. I was like, you plan to travel just before Christmas, then you must plan for missing Christmas because weather. If it's not foggy, it's raining and icy, or it's snowing. I mean, this is Britain.
Where do you think you are, the Bahamas?
Oh, exactly. So I've had some Christmas cheer in watching a bunch of overpaid and underaware people being annoyed at BA for not being able to make it. I mean, I do kind of feel for people in a sense, but really, you know, come on, the amount of money they spend on those flights, you could feed a whole bunch of people in Africa for that. So.
Well, is it Brit Rail? I mean, is that the official nickname?
They don't have a national rail service anymore. Tony Blair privatized it.
Oh, well, damn.
Yeah. We used to have a national joke, which was the National Rail Service. Now we have a series of national jokes, which are all the companies that now run on the National Rail Network.
So how long does it take to get from, say, London to Edinburgh?
On the main line, I don't know, 5 hours, 6 hours. Then that's like if it's, you know, assuming they're not going at full speed, which they rarely do at the moment because they're underinvested.
And so if you spend an hour going through, you get to Heathrow an hour, 2 hours early to get through security. You spend an hour getting through security. Then you get on your aircraft and you fly to Edinburgh and then you wait to get your luggage. How long does it take to fly to Edinburgh from Heathrow?
It takes about 7 hours. it's not you get there 2 hours early. You now have to get there 4 hours early because of the security. You spend at least 2 hours in the airport once you've got through check-in. And then it takes an hour and a half to 2 hours to fly, depending on where they are in the takeoff and landing rack. Because, I mean, essentially, the actual flying bit is not very long at all, you know, but it's the circling up and the circling back down again at the airport that takes all the time. But you can fly from Cardiff to London, and you can drive it in 2.5 hours, and that's driving sensibly and safely. If you really, you know, I mean, if you're in an ambulance and you go with the lights on, you could make it in about an hour and 40 minutes.
That blows my mind. Cardiff to London is apparently from the studios here to a football game in Morgantown.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it's cheaper to get on a plane from Cardiff to London than it is to get on a train or a bus.
Weird.
Yeah, but it's because, you know, there's the aviation industry isn't taxed on its fuel or anything. There's no incentive. Like, there's an incentive to not use a car or a train because there's tax on it. There's no incentive to not use a plane.
Well, thank God Her Majesty's government has eliminated corporate welfare.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But yes, you know, I rang up to say what's there to be fearful about this Christmas, same as every other Christmas, really. The only thing to be fearful about, really, is your family, and that's what's important. Stuff the presents, stuff the ridiculous nativity scenes and the people who are hanging Santa, it's all irrelevant. You know, fact is, the world's in a mess. And the world's in a mess because we live in a system where corporations think they can just do whatever the hell they like, and they can.
We're in a mess because we're kept in a mess. The mess is not accidental, Andy.
No, the mess is totally intentional. I mean, I sometimes go off and kind of, I probably sound like I'm blaming the American people, and I really don't want to.
Well, no, we earned some, Andy. I mean,
you didn't. You can't blame a child who grows up and is abused for thinking that that's kind of normal, yeah? And that's what you've all been. You've all been abused as Americans. You've been abused from the moment you're born upwards. And I'm not just talking about the lack of health care and all that. Your education system is just, I mean, ours is bad, but yours is horrendous. I mean, making a pledge of allegiance to a flag every morning? You know, what free thinking? do you teach free thinking in your schools? Do you teach
Christian? No free thinking.
I mean, most people, according to like all of the talks I hear of people who did political science and things like that in American schools, didn't understand political science when they finished their degree. And most of them don't understand political science when they finish
their degree. Well, much of our education system is not geared on getting you to actually be able to do what it is you're learning to do. A lawyer fresh out of law school is not competent to represent even so much as a self-confessed axe murderer. Mm-hmm. Okay? A doctor fresh out of medical school is not competent to cut on dead things.
Mm. And I mean, the entire system is just flawed, and that makes me, I don't know, kind of angry. And I mean, it puts people in the position of, here's an example. There's those Marines who are up in court for murder and cover up, yeah?
Yeah.
On Newsnight the other night, they had an interview with, the parents of one of the Marines. And the mother and the father were both, you know, sort of semi crying to camera, saying, how can they abandon my son like this? This is so wrong, rah, 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 rah. And while you can understand their point of view, ultimately it's an investigation into a criminal offense, and
well, it's that, and by the same token, it is how can they abandon him? They can abandon him because they have to, because if they don't, it becomes utterly apparent that most of the outrages that happen in Iraq happen because of policies that were established in the office of the President of the United States and Donald Rumsfeld, and it all rolls downhill, and these people are only behaving in the means that they have been told to behave.
But it goes back further. I mean, look at Vietnam. The day My Lai happened, the only time a massacre was even, like, noticed, and even then, Colin Powell, as his basically first action in supporting the administration of any day, was to cover it up. He said, oh, well, there were a few disagreements, but generally relations between the Vietnamese people and the American soldiers were excellent. That was his conclusion about My Lai. We all know what happened there. One of your helicopter pilots ordered his men to fire with miniguns on American soldiers if they didn't stop shooting civilians. And you know, that was one moral act. And what happened to him? Railroaded out of the army, wasn't he? And what, the same day as My Lai happened, there was another one, 20 miles down the same valley, another village where there was another slaughter. And there were thousands of these slaughters all across Vietnam. And it's because it's not most of your soldiers do it, but it's because the system is set up so that American soldiers, just like America in general, can never make mistakes, never do anything intentionally wrong, only ever make an error or a slight mistake or a misjudgment. Misjudgment's the favorite one. You know?
Yeah.
That's what America always does. Oh, well, you know, oops, didn't mean to do that. Didn't mean to destroy Guatemala and ruin its economy. Oh, didn't mean to destroy Nicaragua. Didn't mean to destroy Haiti. Didn't mean to destroy, throw a dart at an atlas.
Well, I've been very disturbed at the And I don't know where it is that we lost it out. I mean, if you study Civil War history, all the good generals went to the South. Albert Sidney Johnston, Robert E. Lee, Thomas J. Jackson, John Bell Hood, and all of them were Mexican War veterans, or virtually all of them. On the other hand, poor Abraham Lincoln had to go through a bunch of no good generals trying to get somebody that would actually fight. And I think probably the generals that Lincoln went through bear the closest similarity to the status of our military general staff as any time in history. You know, coming out of World War One, you've at least got Black Jack Pershing, and you've got a group of officers that wind up being folks like crazy ass George Patton and Omar Bradley and George Marshall and Dwight Eisenhower and
managing combat at the hard end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But right now our general staff is this.
Yeah, I mean your general staff right now is very much like our general staff. I mean our army has like 3 death pushes per soldier or something. I'm not sure what it is in yours, but it's probably somewhere in the same region. I mean,
well, I read somewhere the other day that half of the so-called combat troops in Iraq right now aren't combat troops.
Yeah, probably.
You know, they're public affairs officers and things like that.
Well, you know, your army no longer fights wars. Your army now performs corporate, well, hostile takeover actions.
Well, Greg Palast refers to them as the armed wing of ExxonMobil's oil exploration unit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they, you know, and they are in many respects. They're the armed wing of whichever huge corporation needs some money now or has an interest. I mean, you know, United Fruit, for God's sake, used the U.S. military.
Well,
remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I mean, United Fruit, that you can hardly call them. I mean, they're a corporation of some size, but they're not exactly ExxonMobil, are they?
No, but, you know, if you got the right lobbyist.
Well, that's the thing. And it's also about that the corporations play your government. And I mean, the worst thing is that your government doesn't often realize it's being played. I mean, they know they're getting their bribes. I mean, the money appears in the offshore bank accounts on a regular basis. They know they're well paid. The corporations turn up and say, oh, this is a blow to American pride and the American people won't like it. And so the politicians go, aha, there's a reason to do it then. And another country gets invaded, another bunch of women and children get turned into pink mist or burned to a crisp or shot by Marines who have gone crazy.
And you and me sit here talking on a telephone line between the Appalachian Mountains and the mountains of Wales. And we at least have the common sense to recognize that this is not unintentional chaos and misery. In many instances, it is manipulated and manufactured misery.
I'd say in every instance. I mean, you know, there are some situations where it gets out of hand, or the thing doesn't work out the way they meant it to work out.
Well, I don't think the poor damn fools over here realized all the crap that would happen around Katrina. They deliberately de-emphasized the Federal Emergency Management Agency, but they didn't. You know, it was more short-sighted. Then, when the disaster struck, then the intentional misery kicked in because they realized they had an opportunity to utterly rework a significant portion of a political map.
Yeah, take advantage. That's their number one like driving aim, isn't it? Whatever happens, take advantage. I mean, you know, Katrina, why did they weaken FEMA? They didn't know Katrina would hit. They didn't know the name of the storm that would do it, but they knew something was going to go down. And, of course, if they weaken FEMA and it doesn't react properly and it fails, then they could say, look, government's rubbish. Look at this system Bill Clinton left us, and it didn't work. Yeah?
Yeah.
And, you know, Bill Clinton would have made the same claim if he'd have done it. And,
well,
you know,
and
like Bill Clinton.
Early on, you know, as much as I opposed the Iraq War, you know, the George Bush ran for office in the 2000 cycle saying, right now, there are 10 divisions that, if they were called to active duty, would have to say, not ready for duty, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is that the U.S. military, on the wrong mission, performed quite marvelously on the front end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much, and I'm not approving of it by any stretch of the imagination, but they did what armies are supposed to do. They blew the hell out of everything in their path, achieved their objectives, and set up camp.
Yeah, and totally did exactly what they'd lost doing in the war game. Do you remember the war game?
Yeah, oh yeah.
the name of the general. But yeah, three times they stopped and started those damn war games, because each time he split the Iraqi army up into small groups, had the arms caches throughout the country. The Americans came in, they blew everything up, they stomped all over their objectives, they went, we win, and then they lost the insurgency.
Yeah.
Each time. And oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah, there's, and see, that's a mark of poor generalship, because that's where the generals were looking at, oh, there's something wrong with the game.
Yeah, they're going, there's something wrong with the game. We're supposed to come in here and kick your ass. And the general who was commanding the defense said, no, that's not how it's going to work. They're not going to stand up to you with tanks and huge divisions, because you'll kick
their ass.
It's
a desert. We're going to disappear into it.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's cities all over the place. There's tiny settlements. The desert of Iraq is not a great big sandy desert like... most of it isn't like it's Saudi, the south bit is, but most of the desert of Iraq is rock desert, which means there's gullies, like from where water washed through.
Yeah, it's where the Arabic word wadi comes from.
Yeah, you know, you can hide really easily in that desert. And you know.
Yeah, well, exactly, and that's the thing, Andy. Our general staff, the guys with the jewelry on their shoulder boards now, yeah, are largely they were little second Louis and so forth in Vietnam.
Yeah, the closest they got to any gunfire was when somebody pulled the string on a howitzer in the neighboring fire bastion.
And they got the idea that if there weren't any trees on it, it couldn't possibly be as bad as jungle warfare.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean this is
from the top. But you've got to remember, it's incompetence driven by a group who really don't care about the incompetence. I mean, look, the incompetence of the Ministry of Defense, or your Defense Department, the incompetence of the President, is neither here nor there when you consider the people who win are the corporations behind him, people that Henry Kissinger works for.
You know, I saw a recent chart of the value of Dick Cheney's Halliburton stock options since he became vice president.
Mm.
And it's just up, 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 up.
Yeah, let me.
And it's not because of the miracle of the marketplace.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Halliburton's still worthless as a corporation. I mean, its stock is still, you know, wallowing around because of the incredible debt it has. That's why Halliburton wanted this war. They need money coming in to pay off all the court cases. That's why, you know, that's why there's open corruption in all of Halliburton's projects in Iraq, because if there wasn't open corruption at all places, they wouldn't be able to siphon the money off to pay for the court cases they've lost.
Well, you know, a lot of that had to do with not so bright Dick picking up W.R. Grace and Company.
That's exactly it. I mean, that, you know, he picked it up, and suddenly he had to get a load of money for the corporation. And if he's the vice president of America, well, a war will do.
Yeah, I think I scrape up a little bit here and there.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, look at who really profited out of, I don't know, the Second World War. Well, first of all, who got compensation in the Second World War? My granddad didn't. He died of bronchitis and pneumonia because of the Second World War, because he spent every night for like 6 years on a gun in freezing rain and wind outside of Perth defending the docks from German bombers. He didn't get any compensation. Do you know who did? Prescott Bush.
Sure.
Henry Ford.
Northrop Grumman. McDonnell Douglas.
Name the firm that didn't have a factory in Germany that got blown up and didn't get any compensation. All your American firms got compensated from the British Treasury for blowing up your damn factory, which they were making bombs that were blowing up our homes.
All right, it's official. I got to go back and start reading Catch 22 again, Andy.
Well, this is the thing. We're being played, and we've been played ever since, well, I'd argue definitely since the Federal Reserve was created, because the Federal Reserve is kind of the ultimate core group of the American elite class. I mean, you know, the reason we get confused sometimes is we forget that the ruling class are fighting each other. The French ruling class do not like the American ruling class. The Russians don't like anybody. The Chinese loathe everyone, but will make a buck off anyone. You know, they're all competing. The Americans have been the most successful up till now simply because of the military force thing. But now that's falling apart, isn't it? I mean, who's now actually afraid of America except for the nuclear weapons? And we all know that if America fires any of those nuclear weapons, we're all screwed anyway. So.
Well, you know, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad came out the other day, and you know, I'll be honest. There's a couple of conservative, or a couple of message boards out there that I've participated on lately, that have a healthy dose of, you know, real, honest to God, still dumber than a bag of rags, Bush voters on it.
Yeah.
And so every now and then they'll, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is as bad as Hitler. And it's because the crazy little bastard, and I mean that not like he's not intelligent, I mean just religiously insane.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he's a fanatic, whether.
You know, every now and then he comes out and he pokes the West with a sharp stick. Because he, because there is one way that that sucker wins, and that is if he can get us to fire the first shot. And the problem is we've got a guy in the White House who is stupid enough to fire the first shot.
Yeah, absolutely, and you've got a whole bunch of...
And Tony Blair's not helping right now.
Well, no, I mean, Tony Blair's a... I mean, let's face it. I mean, we have the... What was it? Our Foreign Office had the view of Britain being a junior partner, when in fact, actually, you know, we do what the Americans want or screw us, which is how the Americans view it. And, you know, quite frankly, I mean, if I was in the government of Britain, then there would have been a very different course. Britain wouldn't have gone into Afghanistan, let alone into Iraq. I mean, the number one reason I wouldn't have had Britain go into Afghanistan has nothing to do with Osama bin Laden, nothing to do with the horribly oppressive regimes everywhere. The main reason I wouldn't have gone into Afghanistan is because the opium crop has gone up and up and up ever since. And you know what? The number of heroin users on the streets of Britain has gone up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the heroin's stronger and coming in larger quantities, so it's cheaper. So more and more of them are getting themselves dead. And, like, you know, there's every week, every...
Yeah, well, what's that called, a hot dose? Yeah.
Yeah, every week, every city in Britain has at least one smack user found needling arms somewhere, you know, in a tunnel or in a bed sit or whatever. And, you know, we have always had drug problems in this country, but, I mean, this is just stupid. And it's so unnecessary, but, of course, corporations want to sell bombs, they want to sell planes, they want to sell bits that build pipelines across the world's fourth largest untapped reserve.
Caspian Sea Basin?
Yeah.
Oh,
you know, let's face it, it's about oil, it's always about oil, it's about the corporate elites, it's about the ruling elite.
Yeah, I would just love to do what little bit I can to get off the oil, Jones.
Well, don't buy anything plastic for Christmas.
A little late.
Stop.
A little late.
Well,
but, you know,
I know.
Don't buy any plastic for Christmas. That's like, don't breathe in the air for Christmas in this culture. You know what I mean?
I know. Well, don't buy anything useless in plastic then. I mean, I always make sure I don't buy anything Chinese. I won't buy any Chinese electronics or anything like that. I'll only buy European made.
Yeah, but, that's the thing. There are still European manufacturers. I'm very proud to say, and I think I've mentioned before, the mixing board through which this whole thing happens was purchased for the express reason that I could get good British workmanship.
Mm.
As opposed to everything else being Chinese. Our Allen and Heath Mix Wizard 12-2 was manufactured right there on the island, and I don't mean Taiwan.
No. And I mean, that's part of our problem, you know. I mean, we've got, you know, the most ironic thing happened today in the news. A bunch of British Business Institute people, like, you know, the sort of, I don't know, they're, you know, they get together and tell the Times what to think and stuff like that, yeah. They're actually now complaining about all the offshoring of manufacturing jobs because it's hurting our economy now. It's like, well, I'm afraid, guys, that that's called globalization, and you should have woken up and smelled the coffee when I did, when I was about...
Yeah, aren't they partially responsible for that?
Absolutely, they're responsible for that. I mean, let's face it, right? Britain, America, France, Russia, we don't have to follow the World Bank rules, we don't have to follow the IMF rules, and very often we don't. But where we do, it destroys our economy. And the reason it destroys our economy is because the World Bank and the IMF are designed with the express purposes of destroying economies. If you don't believe me, do some research. Go to Google, type in IMF or World Bank, type in countries they've operated in, and get a list, and go and have a look at the countries. And you'll see that they were all going up in productivity slowly, and now they've all collapsed. And that's in every case, virtually. You know, there's a couple of exceptions. Like
and that's without even contemplating what the IMF has done to countries that were on the ropes, like Ecuador.
Oh, well, there have been, I mean, that, you know, the word annihilation is quite sort of, you know, economic annihilation. It's not devastating, it's not damaging, it's annihilated. They've been destroyed economically and socially and politically.
Yeah, all under the aegis of as innocuous sounding a phrase as debt service.
Yeah. And I mean, look at Ecuador as a case in point. I mean, Ecuador in 20 years repaid its debt three times, but only in interest payments. And
right, it's the Visa card approach to world debt.
Well, it's worse. Visa will at least, like, not give you too much credit after a certain point.
Oh, you haven't applied lately, have you?
Well, they have very strict rules in Europe, so you guys probably get screwed more than we do.
Yeah. I mean, I can't go to the mailbox with it. Let's see. What is it? You are pre-approved to apply.
Well, we have something over here called the Mailing Preference Service. So you just give your address to that, and if any company contacts you, they get sued.
Oh, that's probably communism.
Well, we've got.
No, I mean, you know, I'm joking, but yeah, God, wouldn't it be? But you see, without bulk rate mail, the United States postal system would collapse.
Oh well, it's the same with our postal system, which is why it's slowly collapsing. I mean, because they privatized it. I mean, my idea of a post office, and sorry, the post office is what it is. Is that you put mails in, and the profit you get out turns out spread around society. Like, people get their mail, that's the profit, yeah?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to, like, make any money. And indeed, if it loses some money, then the government should bail it out with tax money. Because, ultimately...
Because there is a societal, social value in having a functioning postal system.
Like there is with a functioning health service. And they're trying to privatize that as well.
Yeah, or clean running water, sewer systems, a power grid.
Yeah.
You know, what the hell does a profit margin have in a power grid?
Well, you know, there shouldn't be one, but there is. You know, I mean, that's why literally every 3 months our power bills go up in Europe, especially in Britain, because we've been selling our North Sea gas and oil to countries that decided they weren't going to tap their supplies of gas and oil, and now we're running out, and they're going, no, we're not selling you any. You know?
Yeah.
So the entire system of capitalism is what our problem is. And Christmas, with all its plastic crap and all its festive cheer and all its rubbish and all its adverts in August. And
well, you know, and that's and that's the thing it comes down to me. We are guilted, and this is my beef with Christmas. One, as the report, the essay I mentioned last night on the program, mentioned, it didn't become a thing until about 1870 in the United States. Up until that time, it was a day of drunken rioting.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 1870, it becomes a reason to get people to buy crap in the worst shopping season of the year.
Yeah.
But you know, I start feeling Christmas guilt somewhere around whenever the displays go up, and the displays go up here before Halloween is over now.
Yeah.
And Christmas guilt, what I mean by that is the idea that I'm not going to... I mean, there have been different times in this family's existence where we've gone out and dropped $2,000 and $3,000 on Christmas.
Mm.
And it's insane.
It is. It's absolutely
insane. And we got to the point where we will not do it anymore.
No. I mean...
And yet, you know, I know I'm going to look at one of my kids and say, yeah, I really wanted the pony. I wasn't kidding about the pony.
Well, I mean, all you got to do is try and...
Well, you know, I wrote my letter to Santa, too, and that there ain't going to be no Porsche under the Christmas tree.
Well, no. I mean, you know, we need to kind of disassociate worth with value, because worth is not value. Value is something ascribed in an economic system. Worth is something given by a human brain and an emotion. And so, you know, I'll buy my sister something pretty, and I'll buy her some, whether it's like, you know, smoked oil sheen glass things. You get little vases, you get little toadstools.
Mm-hmm.
$5.99, okay, that's nothing, okay. I spend barely anything on any of my family, but I always buy something that's pretty and something they'll like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean? And it's just so I can say, there you go, and the present is really the fact that I love you. And that's what we need to do, because Christmas is just crap.
Well, I've got a little concrete, I got it in my hand right now. One of my best friends lives out in Omaha.
Right.
Nebraska. I don't know what possessed him to send me this for Christmas one year, but I have a little concrete gargoyle.
A concrete gargoyle. Cool.
And he's sitting there gnawing on a bone.
How wicked. You get lots of little Welsh stone dragons and that sort of thing.
And he sits here beside me every night. And you talk about the things that one attaches worth to. That has worth to me, because I'm him and he's me.
Well, yeah.
Sitting there gnawing on that damn bone day in and day out.
And it means more as well, doesn't it? Because you look at it and you think of the friend that sent it to you. You think of the place he's from. You even think of who the hell made it and what possessed them to come up with that idea in the first place. And it's not just some crap DVD. It's not just, you know, I mean, how much does a DVD cost in the States? Because it's like 15 quid over here.
Oh, about, yeah, yeah, we, depends on how big the release is. But yeah, about 20 bucks.
Yeah, so and what do you get? You get a plastic box, which is worth manufacturing cost of about, I don't know, a penny. You get a piece of paper in it, which is worth about a billionth of a penny. You get a CD, which is worth about half a penny. And you get the electricity it costs to burn it on there, which is probably worth about a penny. And distribution cost, which is a few bucks. And yet you pay, 75% profit on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And why? Yeah. So you can watch some rubbish that came out of some corporation that's expressly there to exploit you into buying its products that it holds through other corporations. You know, it's the spider in the web, and there's lots of spiders, and there's lots of webs, and they're all trying to pull us in.
Well, that's why, I mean, I would say more, yeah, it's the absolute truth. The most money that will be spent by this family for this Christmas is the Christmas dinner itself.
Well, that's good. At least you're going to eat it.
And it's, you know, and it will be fun, and it will be fellowship, and we can take a day off from our own domestic disputes.
Yeah, there might well be some more new ones.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there'll be some. Hey, she got one of those, and I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, some. And I am not above delivering the Christmas greed lecture either.
Kids.
Because you know, when your kids start getting to be about the age that ours are, sooner or later you're going to have to haul out the Christmas greed lecture, because I have no truck for I didn't get the pony.
Well, you know, ultimately.
Yeah, Agnes wants a pony too. I just found out.
Well, if anyone deserves a pony, it's Agnes, not the horrors.
Yes, absolutely. But,
you know, obviously children are the part of the problem because, over here they've banned, like, aggressive advertising for fatty foods and stuff, and they're talking about doing it for kids' toys in kids' TV because, you know, children just don't understand that it's not real. That person who's having great fun with that toy...
Well, the American Academy of Pediatrics just recommended that a couple of weeks ago
here
in the U.S., and the American Association of Retail Marketers or some such came out and screamed, "Commie doctors!"
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a terrible pressure to put on a child's mind.
Well, when you look at the amount of money they spent on psychology over the last 30 years on advertising, they've made some really, really key finds. First of all, they found that advertising doesn't work on adults, and that's actually true. It doesn't work on adults. If you're interested in what the product is, then you might be more inclined to buy that variety. But that's not necessarily true. You'll generally buy whatever you buy first and whichever you prefer. But children... whole different story. Literally programmable.
Because that's what children are supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, and because, you know, because children are also quite able to tug on the heartstrings. I mean, I remember once seeing a child in a store say to his mum, "But mum, if you loved me, you'd get that for me."
Oh, I've had that. We've both had that card played on us.
Well, I turned to the little boy and said, "Actually, it's because your mother does love you that she's not going to get it for you. Now think about that one, you little bastard."
Oh, I turned to one of ours one day when they played that, and I said, "Actually, it's because I love you that I'm not going to beat you for trying that crap manipulation on us."
That's a good one. That's a really good one. I'm going to tell any mother I ever hear having that done. I'm going to whisper that one in her ear. Say this to them.
Andy, despite it all, take a break, enjoy, take a breath, have a great holiday, all right?
Well, I'll do my best in love to the family, and take care, man.
Thank you.
Bye now. Mate.
Our good friend Andy in Wales, always a wonderful conversation. Rolling onward to another great friend, Peter in Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, good evening to you.
How are you?
I've recovered now. I was dancing to the Christmas Underwear song.
I had a request to play that, and I couldn't resist.
Yeah, that was very, very appropriate. And speaking of songs, I think I've been listening to Trying to Be Less Polite too much.
it gets under your skin, and it really doesn't affect the way you look at the world, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, not at all. And if you recall, my last call of was the first installment of As the Church Turns.
Is this? And, do we need to fire up the little Hammond organ and get that?
Yeah, and in our last episode,
last week on As the Church Turns,
Peter slaps the pastor on the back as he leaves the church and says, "George Bush is an evil son of a bitch." My God, everybody horrified the congregation. This, of course, was after he said that Bush was a man of God. And I was trying to be less polite. Well, I did it again yesterday. This is the second installment of As the Church Turns.
Oh, evil!
I just wanted to share this with you. We may even have a new listener chatter as a result of all this.
Oh, yay!
We have a lady in our church. We'll call her Smith.
Okay.
Keep it generic. And anyway, the whole Smith family are really evil Republicans. They're, you know, snide remarks about the liberal media and the whole bit. There's a bunch of them in the church. There's this whole, like, little dynasty of them. And so anyway, she has started this group in the church called Ladies for Jesus. So it's just completely barfable right there. It sounds so much like Church Lady. And so anyway, somehow I ended up on her mailing list.
Isn't that special?
Well, I haven't said a word about it.
Wait. This is Ladies for Jesus, and you made the mailing list?
I'm on the mailing list. Now, I have to point out that I am not the only man on it, and all the other men on it, at least I think, are heterosexual. So it's not that kind of a deal. But I did, yes, end up on the list. I haven't said anything about being on the list because I kind of wanted to keep an eye on kind of see what she was up to. And
flying under the radar.
These emails that Ms. Smith sends out are, you know, have all the depth of a PowerPoint presentation. And the one that I received day before yesterday was just more than I could take. It was an email with attachments of a bunch of images of soldiers in Iraq. And they were kind of pitiful. They were praying. There were tears running down their eyes. They were, you know, obviously, you know, someone had died, and the foot in the boot bit, and you know, it's not good. And anyway, the email starts out, "I'd love to tell you about Ladies for Jesus. Let us pray. Prayer chain for our military. Don't break it. Forward this to every." You know, it goes. It's just, you know.
Oh, wait a minute! Ladies for Jesus has gotten into the chain letter business.
Oh yeah, it's, you know, there's no.
I just hate email chain letters, Peter.
I do too. I despise all of them, and then to do it in this light, I mean, it just shows absolutely no depth.
But and the other side of that is, I mean, one of the reasons I hate chain letters is they all, you know, don't break this because, you know, Bill Schmendrick broke the chain and his nose slid off.
Oh, precisely. And
I'm a rational person, but in the back corner of my mind, there's one or two little neurons going, dude, your nose is going to fall off. All you have to do is forward the thing. Just forward it.
Well, I have managed to rewire my brain that immediately that if I see the phrase, don't break it, and it's email, that means hit the delete key because it no doubt goes on to say it's the first thing. But in this case, I didn't. I read it because of who it was from. Ladies from Jesus, after all. I mean, I had to read that.
Yeah.
So it goes, "Lord, hold the troops in your loving hands, protect," and I won't read the whole thing. "Bless their families, selfless acts, perform the name of freedom in time of need, don't stop the preaching," blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I didn't react day before yesterday. It was not until yesterday morning that
you woke up and started kicking things.
Yeah, I just started kicking things. And, you know, on the surface, the email is innocuous, tacky and no depth, but innocuous. It doesn't really say anything. You know,
sort of like a pink flamingo in the front yard.
Yeah. I've always thought that was festive. I am a
garden friend. Gnomes.
You offended me. I'm going to send a herd of them up there.
They're welcome.
Yeah, right. So anyway, the thing that really was offensive about it is how we constantly in the church have this veneer of everything's fine, and when we get upset about something, it'll be what the Walmart clerks are saying during December. And in other words, everybody's ignoring the elephant in the room. I just couldn't take it anymore. I snapped. This has to do entirely with you and Agnes.
It's our fault.
And whoever that person was in the chat room that forwarded me trying to be less polite, that was involved too. But anyway, I replied, and I see now, Kelly is not the... Miss Smith is not the... Miss Smith is not the brightest bulb on the tree. So when she sends out one of her mailing lists, she puts everybody in the two group, which of course exposes an entire mailing list to everybody.
Right.
Right, instead of using blind carbon copy like normal intelligent liberals do. But in any case, of course, I had her entire mailing list. And so anyway, I responded to the entire mailing list because this includes all the the worst Republicans in the whole church, and the preacher, and
oh God, and, I can see him. I could just see him reaching for the rheumatism medicine now.
Peter's at it again, and I won't read the response word for word because that, you know, kind of boring hearing email. But I'll paraphrase it. Basically, I said thank you, Kelly, and I mentioned that in one of our Sunday school assembly times, you know, last year. We were very concerned about the troops, the deaths reaching 2,000, and that we put it on the prayer list. And then I pointed out that the figures this morning, meaning yesterday morning, was that the deaths confirmed by the Department of Defense was 2,953, and deaths for pending confirmation 6, for a total number of deaths of 2,959. And I put my source in there, linked to source, and I mentioned that there's the figure of the wounded, which is over 22,000, and put the source in there. And then I went on to say that due to, you know, the extreme fighting, and that a lot of news sources are saying that there's more than 900 attacks a day, it's very likely that by this Sunday morning, meaning just day after tomorrow, that the deaths will reach 3,000. And then I said, Ms. Smith, in my opinion, praying for the troops directly is like praying for the passengers of a plane that's in a nosedive while the pilots are sound asleep. And I said, for me, it makes more sense to pray that the pilots get a swift kick in the ass. Yes, I said ass to a church lady.
You sent ass in a Methodist email.
The whole church. And I said I'm praying for a quick rebuke of the incompetent administration who put them there and that intends to put 20,000 more there. And the next sentence, I'll read this because I actually lifted it from yesterday's Huffington Post, but it was too good not to use. Thank you, Huffington Post. This is perfect. And it reads, the whole pro-surge argument reminds me of this country song by Vince Gill, Give Me Just One More Last Chance. And the song's about a drunk who's begging his girlfriend for the umpteenth time to be reprieved for doing whatever he did wrong. And I said, or Huffington said, actually, which is in this email, because just like in the country song, you know, all one more last chance in Iraq was going to get us is one more plea for one more last chance and another 1,000 or so grieving mothers. And I thought about it for a long time, and finally I hit send and waited for the brown to hit the fan. And so it took a while, but the replies, because I sent it to the whole group, started rolling in. One lady, and we have a new one lady. I was thrilled. She sent me an email saying kudos for saying that, and that she thought it was a wonderful thing. And I've been in contact with her. She's probably going to join us in the chat room later tonight, depending on what time she gets home. And she listened to part of Malloy last night. She's just so happy she could hardly stand it. So, you know, good things come out of these things. So that was one good reply. I received one email from a lady who's also a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, whose son is who just enlisted, and she was in the standard, you know, Christian guilt trip mode. I need your support, and I don't know what you think about the administration. You must think my son is stupid, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, rather than fall for all of her traps to get into all the little separate arguments,
right.
I responded, you know, that I'm praying for the troops in the highest way I know, and that's to get them out of harm's way, period. And I didn't address her, you know, demands on support and all the different, and, you know,
yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, he's probably not too bright if he enlisted, but, you know, that's...
Calling John Kerry.
You know, and the thing about it is you know, the troop, of course, the intelligence of the troops, just like any other segment of the population, they range from the dumb ones to the brilliant ones, but I'd like them all out of harm's way. It doesn't really much matter to me.
Yeah, I'm tired of seeing any of them die.
Me too, absolutely.
Even the skinheads that have been allowed to enlist.
Even them. And I got a reply from the pastor.
Oh!
And I had...
Were there breaking candles and declarations that thou art anathema?
Well... Let me read. The first sentence of his email says, so, Peter, does this mean you're first in line to give the pilots a swift kick? Now, this is, of course, the reference to the biblical casting the first stone.
Yes.
To which I replied, the November elections was a swift kick. The recommendations of the Iraq Commission saying that this cannot be won militarily was a swift kick. And the fact that the entire Joint Chiefs of Staff is saying no to more troops is a swift kick. And then I said, the boy in the bubble could not care less. People die while he looks for a way to maintain the machismo of a war president. So, yes, 2 exclamation points. I'd love to be first in line. You know, I'm just not taking it anymore, Bob. I'm getting meaner for the minute. And then the next line is it not possible for you to pray for the troops in your heart while you're giving the pilots a swift kick with your foot. And I said, we've been praying for the troops for years. A lot of good it's done. I'm praying for the troops the highest way I know to get them out of harm's way.
Yeah, we've apparently prayed 3,000 of them right into a hole in the ground.
Well, it's absolutely true. It's like you have bowel cancer and you pray about the diarrhea. I think it's more important to pray about the cancer.
Jeez. Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
You hurt me.
I didn't mean to. You know, it's just that for some reason, whenever I start talking about the Bush family, I keep going into the doo-doo mode.
It really recommends itself, doesn't it?
Yeah. And he asked about some poem he wants to read Sunday. I'd be like a soldier's prayer, and I'm here to help you and protect you. Anyone know if it should be read? And I said, well, yeah, go ahead and sure read it. The people who have loved ones in Iraq will, you know, be
people. Yeah.
I personally thought it was barf material, but that the point was not the poem. It was the other stuff.
Yeah. On that 14 defining characteristics of fascism list that Malloy's talked about and I've talked about and other liberal progressive talkers have mentioned. One of the 14 defining characteristics of fascism, Peter, is the deification of the military.
There you go. There you go. Cannot be questioned. Must be prayed for.
Yeah, right. And no matter what they're doing, you have to talk about it as being done in terms of protecting our freedoms.
Yeah, yeah. And
well, you know, Lieutenant Aaron Watata is on trial looking at losing 6 years of his life doing hard time in a military prison for standing up and saying he will not participate in an illegal war.
Yes, yes, he did. I sent him a small donation way back at the beginning of that. I'm sure
and,
he has the site still. If you know the site name, you might mention it. Maybe somebody has $10 they can send. I'm sure he could use it.
Thank you, ltwatata.org, maybe?
Right. It's thank you or TY. I can't remember,
yeah.
But you can just Google Lieutenant
right.
Watata. Right?
But the point is, that's a moral act on his part. And basically what he's doing is trying to un-deify the military.
Yeah.
I hate the way that the right-wingers respond to this. This is not a criticism of the troops. This is not a criticism of the military in general. But the fact of the matter is, you cannot, with any degree of intellectual honesty, say that what's going on in Iraq is in any way related to preserving our freedom.
Hell no. How many variations?
We started this war in Iraq, and how many freedoms have we lost?
Absolutely.
Where the hell's habeas corpus gone?
Absolutely.
Since the war in Iraq started, we've got brand new prisons being built to hold millions of people all over the United States being built by Halliburton, and Halliburton admits it, for the love of God. That's not freedoms being preserved. Those are set up for freedoms to be taken away.
Absolutely. And our new friend who's going to be joining us pointed out in an email to me during the thick of this last night when all the emails were flying about that you ask 10 different people why we're at war in Iraq, you get 10 different answers. What's that about? She says at the big exclamation point. You know, she's mad as hell, too. I think.
Well, yeah, and, you know, we've got to complete the mission. Fine. Somebody for... How the heck are you supposed to complete a mission that nobody will tell you what it is? Oh, it's a secret. National security, it's a secret. The mission's a secret. Can't tell you what the secret is, but you've got to complete it.
Well, you know, it's just not funny anymore, Bob. And the church keeps its head in the sand and talks about praying for the soldiers. And to me, it has all the depth of the Chinese yellow stickers that go on the cars. We need to start talking about the elephant in the room. If the church is going to be a reality-based community... I mean, and you know, I am.
And if they're going to live up to their mission, for heaven's sake,
right? And if they all don't speak to me, and I go to church every Sunday, just run the soundboard and never have a word spoken and walk away, fine. But you know, I'm not keeping my mouth shut anymore. I've had years of experience hiding things and keeping my mouth shut about every damn aspect of my life.
There are all manner of liberals and progressives and Christians. And other moral people who, to one degree or another, remain silent, gave them their chance. Oh, okay, we could be wrong. You know, this war in Iraq may be the very thing we need. It wasn't.
Oh, yeah, I got an email from my sister who goes to church. She's like, way to go. That's a good way to get off the mailing list. She's at all.
Yeah, and you ain't coming to the Christmas party, and you're not getting any of that good Methodist after the wedding punch that's right. Made out of the ginger ale and the rainbow sherbet.
Yeah, she said all Miss Smith wants on that list is the Ditto Heads anyway. So anyway, I that's this week's installment of As the Church Turns, and I think I may be on a roll. I may be. On one of those piles of wood next.
Well, maybe one of these Sundays when the preacher can't make it, instead of getting that last dude, and George Bush is a godly man, what's the Methodist Church?
Speaker term?
No. What's your church?
Mikasuki Methodist.
Yeah, Mikasuki Methodist right. Fairness doctrine can be engaged.
Ooh.
And Brother Peter can come to the pulpit and offer an alternative and equally valid viewpoint to that of the right-wing Nazi who spoke here 2 weeks ago.
Well, I'm officially not a lay. You have to be a lay speaker where you go to like this afternoon class where they basically just go, well, you're a lay speaker.
Mavis, another one showed up to be a lay speaker. You want some coffee?
But lay speaker or not, I'm speaking out, and I just want everybody to know that it's okay, that, it's not fatal. And, when you start getting the emails back, if you do something like this, just don't fall into their traps. Just respond factually and don't try to defend every, just state it factually.
Yeah, well, and see, I've noticed that. Because these days, if you engage one of these 20%ers, that's what we call them these days, Peter, they're 20%ers. Because that was, that was an invention of the Bush administration. That was one of Rummy's things. These are just a bunch of 7%ers. Well, there's 20% of America that supports George Bush's policy in Iraq. When you get engaged by one of these 20%ers, what you'll find is you'll say something to them like, well, why couldn't they pay attention to the terrorist threat before 9/11? What about that August 6th presidential daily briefing? And and their response to it is liberal.
Yeah, right. Name calling.
No, answer the question. You've got talking points. Well, but what about the August 6th, 2001 presidential daily briefing? Flip flopper. You not. American, they hate us for our freedoms. Go shopping.
Yeah, right.
And you can't get them to answer a daggum question.
No, you can't. Fair. I do have to say that before we end, I do have to say that the last reply from the preacher after I said all those things back to the preacher was, I got a reply saying, I knew I liked you for some reason, which means he's just a freaking closet liberal who's up there, preaching the party line and doesn't believe it. He might as well be gay. How's that? He's not.
Her name was Lola.
Right. The church just kills me, but I'm just so involved in it. But it kills me, but it's like everything else in life. There's just one of everything in there. There's just, and, I think churches attract twisted, disturbed people anyway that just don't, I'm going to be so ill, that don't fit anywhere.
There are
else.
Little demons in hell that are jumping on the bellows right now, Peter.
And I'm one of them.
We're going to baste him with the hot barbecue sauce, Daddy.
Right. So anyway, Bob, that's all I know.
So much you do know.
So that's just the installment, and I'll be sure and see what I can pull up for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, do that, please.
All right. Hugs to you guys.
All right. See ya. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
All right. I don't know. I'm going to spring one on Agnes here. No, it's not the new blood diamond or anything. Here, honey, look, little children got their legs blown off so you could have a pretty new ring. No. I got a sense that we're going to run out of time before we run out of stuff tonight. And that being the case, if Agnes can't, I will. What do you guys think about going an extra hour tonight? We'll go to 10. Just like we used to go to 10. Mike started his holiday vacation. He won't mind. We'll have some fun. Okie dokie. A little listener-supported music here.
Thank you, Angelica.
Thank you, Angelica. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Share your thoughts, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid. We're going to have a Merry Christmas or bust in the process. We'll be back after news.
This is the Quality News Network. Tomorrow, a meeting at Camp David between Defense Secretary Robert Gates, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley. President Bush is expected to hear their ideas on new strategy in Iraq. Defense Secretary Gates concluded his three-day trip to Iraq today. He spoke with military and political leaders there in an effort to gain fresh perspective on war strategy for White House use. West of Baghdad, five U.S. soldiers were killed in fighting, the military announced today. 76 American troops have been killed in the Iraq War in December so far. Also around Baghdad today, 12 bodies were found, the latest apparent victims of sectarian violence. The leader of an umbrella organization for Iraqi insurgent groups offering a 30-day truce to allow America and its allies time to withdraw all of their forces from Iraq and turn over its military bases to, quote, to the Mujahideens of the Islamic State, unquote. The United Nations Security Council votes tomorrow on whether or not to impose sanctions on Iran's nuclear program. Vote was delayed one day because of Russia's concern about proposed financial bans. In Beijing, the six-nation talks about North Korea's nuclear program concluded without an agreement. After 5 days of discussion, North Korea still insisting that international sanctions be lifted first before it would dismantle its nuclear weapons. In southern Afghanistan today, a remote-controlled bomb killed five Afghan policemen, part of a police convoy. Earlier in the day in Kabul, a member of parliament was targeted in an assassination attempt. He survived, however, a civilian was killed. Several of his bodyguards were wounded. A fragile ceasefire in Gaza remains in place despite clashes between Hamas and rival factions. Runways at Denver International Airport reopened this afternoon. However, officials say it will take days to move thousands of passengers. In all, more than 2,000 flights were canceled at the nation's fifth busiest airport during the pre-holiday travel rush. That's due to heavy winter storms. New population estimates show Louisiana lost nearly 220,000 residents in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, nearly 5% of its pre-storm population. That could possibly cost the state a congressional seat during the next reapportionment if that trend continues on. That's its spin. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business news is next.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
The space shuttle Discovery safely landed this afternoon at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The shuttle spent 8 days of its 13-day mission at the International Space Station. Space Shuttle Atlantis is next up, scheduled for launch next March. CDC says they tracked down the source of the largest measles outbreak in a decade. 34 people fell ill in Indiana and Illinois last year. Source was a 17-year-old girl on a church trip traveling to a Romanian orphanage where she became infected and apparently brought it back to the States. American Airlines boosted some of its domestic ticket prices by up to $40 per flight. Delta Airlines quickly matched the increase, and other competitors could soon follow. Officials for American say jet fuel costs are $15 higher than last year, prompting that increase to customers. Charles Schwab Corporation purchasing a 401k manager from insurer Nationwide Financial Services for $115 million, and a federal appeals court threw out the punitive damages ExxonMobil Corporation was ordered to pay after the Valdez oil spill. Court reduced the $5 billion jury award today, saying it was, quote, unconstitutionally excessive. Light sweet crude closing at $62.41 a barrel. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow down 78 points at 12,343, NASDAQ down 15, the S&P 500 down 8. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, now that we know what others are doing to afflict the comfortable, as the saying goes, there's a couple of news stories out there that deserve our attention, and I mentioned making sure that we hit these earlier, because there's just some stuff out there that if you let it go by, somehow you feel like you've done the wrong thing. And in the course of the conversation with Peter, and I mentioned this also earlier in the conversation with our good friend Charlie Sullivan, we are told frequently, routinely, from the right wing, what you get is you have to say it all together as if it's a brand name, our military who are fighting for our freedoms in Iraq. You know, like there's a hyphen between every word, our military who are fighting for our freedoms in Iraq. I have yet to figure out how Iraq has anything to do with my freedom. And would gladly rat slap the first right winger who said, say he don't support the troops. There's a big difference between supporting the troops and sending them places to do stupid things. And this war has gotten to a point where there is no, where the only thing you can, the only word you can use to describe it, and all the strategy of the high flown, high blown fly boys and bomb girls and so that dream this garbage is stupid. And the part about defending our, protecting our freedom is so much, my God, I'd call it hogwash, but a hog wouldn't touch it half-starved. We have lost the right to habeas corpus protection. I got to figure a better way to message that. Because if you're trying to reach out and explain to somebody who maybe used to be a Bush supporter but now has come over to the sane 78% or whatever, you say habeas corpus and their eyes go whoop and roll into the back of their heads. Habeas corpus? Such an innocuous little Latin phrase. Have the body. Let us have the body. Why do you have the body? I've had six different professors, and six different professors all had a different translation, formal translation for habeas corpus. But the fact of the matter is, it is the one lone thing in the Constitution that stands between any American and being thrown in jail for doing something the government doesn't like. Habeas corpus applies to the city jail. Habeas corpus applies to the county jail. Habeas corpus applies to mental health institutions. Habeas corpus applies to anywhere that an American's liberties have been taken from them and they have been subjected to confinement for any reason. Any reason. Every prisoner, and of course, the most state prisons have a steady stream of habeas corpus petitions rolling out of them because it's the only thing the prisoner has to make sure that his case is reviewed and that his incarceration is either confirmed or overturned. And in the American prison and judicial system, very few such petitions are successful. But it literally stands between a guy sitting at home and being dragged out by the authorities for no good reason and his continued freedom as an American citizen, or hers. It's probably burnt into your brains by now that it's enshrined at Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution, and it speaks in some of the plainest language in that entire relatively plain document. Article 1, Section 9 says that habeas corpus shall not be suspended except in cases of invasion and rebellion. And yet, at the stroke of a pen, it's gone. So there's a certain irony in saying that the troops are fighting for our freedoms in Iraq, while it would appear that we need them fighting for our freedom back here. And the people that they're fighting against are a bunch of terrified mega authoritarian Republicans and mugwumped up scared bunny Democrats. And one of our listeners sent me this posting today. Privatized immigrant detention facilities for families revealed to be modern-day concentration camps. Now, I've done a pretty good job lately of not going off into any purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissies. But I did have a bit of a hissy last week when I realized that union members had been rounded up in the great big harrowing Department of Homeland Security identity theft ring SWAT sting whatever ingathering that went after meatpacking plants in places like Utah. Members of the United Food and Commercial Workers were gathered up. They had 60 arrest warrants and gathered up 5,000 people. They were able to do this because habeas corpus has been suspended by a bunch of mega-authoritarian Republican lawmakers and a handful of terrified bunny Democrats. One of the more disturbing stories that surfaced after the Swift meat plant raids was how too many children were left without a parent and or farmed out to friends and families with no immediate word on how they will be reconnected with their mommy and puppy. You want a Christmas story? Here's a Christmas story. A week ago, mommy and daddy disappeared. It's 3 days before Christmas, and you, child, still do not know where mommy and puppy are. But if news filtering out of one of the newly designated immigrant detention centers for families, immigrant detention centers for families, is any indication, no undocumented parent is going to open their mouth and claim their children Oh, my God. Somebody, No undocumented parent is going to open their mouth and claim their children if the whole family is going to be subjected to what is becoming known as the first known concentration camp on American soil in the 21st century. The T. Don Hutto Residential Center in Taylor, Texas, on the outskirts of Austin, is a private detention facility operated by Corrections Corporation of America. It and a smaller center in Pennsylvania are the only two facilities in the country, oh God, that are authorized to hold non-Mexican Mexican immigrant families and children on non-criminal charges. This is what the torture bill meant. This is what the outcome was when those 13 mugwump terrified Democrat senators voted for the torture bill. It means that the Taylor facility there, the 400 people held there, 200 are children. Children behind razor wire. Children behind concertina wire. And those families can be kept there for as long as George W. Bush sees fit. They have no access to a lawyer. They have no access to family. They have no access to the very courts of this nation that are designed to ensure that the government does not trample upon the individual rights of people. The children range in age from newborn infant upward. Get it? Yeah, just let it roll around in your skull for a little bit. We have built prisons for entire families who are now incarcerated on no charge, on no sentence, and at a duration that may only be arbitrarily declared by the President of the United States. Some lawyers have visited people there, and they say that the children get 1 hour of education, English instruction, per day, and they get 1 half-hour of indoor recreation. If I read you all of this and didn't tell you it was in Texas, where would you think it was? If I didn't tell you it was the T. Don Hutto Residential Center in Taylor, where would you think it had been built? And who is or was T. Don Hutto that they would defame his name or memory by hanging it on a concentration camp, on a gulag? All clothing has been taken away and replaced with jail uniforms. As soon as they can wear the smallest size, children are issued jail uniforms. People are becoming ill from the food being served there because, after all, this is a private prison. That means, being private, that the profit motive has to be served. You know where you build the profit into a private prison? In feeding people garbage. This is the upshot of,
please pray for our troops in Iraq who are fighting for our freedom.
Damn. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is calling. Hey, Wayne. Welcome to the program.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I've been trying to get kind of Christmassy, and then, you know, I get slapped right in the face again.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know. Merry Christmas, anyway.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, anyway, to you, too.
What are you going to do? I just wanted to, you know. I love Peter.
Yeah.
And I'm a heterosexual. I mean, you know, the dude's right on, man. It's what people have to do. I mean, if you remember me telling you, you know, I started calling all the religious leaders in Beckley, asking, you know, telling them about the torture bill.
Right.
You know, what, you know, how come you people aren't outraged? How come, you know, well, you know, when I'm told, you know, well, we're praying that that doesn't pass, you know, pray, you know, get off your ass and call your senator or your representative, demonstrate. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but the invisible cloud guy doesn't have a vote in the Senate or the House of Representatives.
Well,
you know, I know I'm...
Except the SOBs who think that they're giving him one.
And then who are those SOBs? The people that are praying?
No, they're the people who thump their Bibles instead of read them.
Exactly. I mean, there's so many religious... people, there's so many people that go to church every, you know, let, you know, if you're against this, then I don't know how you can not be against what's going on and call yourself a Christian. Do something about it. Call your representatives, call your senators, let them know, you know, make statements.
What would happen, what do you suppose would happen in a Southern Baptist church, Wayne, if you told them about the T. Don Hutto Residential Center at Taylor, Texas, where little children wear jail uniforms?
They'd pray for them.
Yeah, because
yes,
yeah, because actually doing something about it, well, we'll leave that up to God.
This has to, you know, I don't know how to wake up the public. I don't know how to motivate them to do something. I'm going to keep calling and keep trying, but, you know, hopefully... Well, we, you know, I wish we had a guy like Peter in every church in the country. Maybe something would, you know.
Well, yeah.
You know.
Or maybe someone who can be inspired by that sort of thing.
You know. I mean, I'd go, but then there'd be mass murder when all the roof caved in and all that jazz. But,
yeah, because God would aim lightning bolts at you.
Right. I don't know. Maybe I could just stand outside.
You don't cast reflections in mirrors either, do you?
No, I don't.
I've never seen you anywhere near a bulb of garlic.
No.
No, but...
I don't like the sun either, Bob.
You're a little pale. You could use a little light. No, but honest to God, this we have, Wayne, we've lost more freedoms since the start of this war than we have in the last two... than we have since the advent of the Revolution. Well, okay, Lincoln suspended habeas corpus, too. But that was in the middle of a civil war.
Yes, it was.
And there were some excesses during the First World War. And in the Second World War, we rounded up the Japanese because, you know, they were funny looking.
Right, but, we're supposed to learn from history. Are we not?
You'd think.
Yeah, well.
You know, as in not repeat our mistakes of the past?
Yes, exactly. And this, you know, the only way to end this, you know, I mean, the Congress has to cut off funding for the war, just like Kucinich says. I mean, that is the way to end this, you know. Declare victory and get out. Do, you know.
Yeah. Whatever you makes you feel good.
Yeah, whatever, you know, I'll buy any story, you know. We had to bring them all home because they wanted to spend more time with their family or whatever. You know, but we got to get out. We have to end this. And, well, I'll tell you a guy that brings up a good point and certainly not a friend to us, and that is I watched Chris Matthews the other night, and he asked some senator or some, whoever he was, maybe it was Pat Buchanan, who's, you know, I don't know when that guy sleeps. He's on television. He's a consultant to everybody. He's on television constantly, but the fact remains, and it's very true. We got the same deal, and when did we get out of NOM? 73?
Five? Yeah.
We got the same deal in 75 that we could have gotten in 69. And the deal was release our prisoners of war. The only difference being there were 36 or 38,000 more American GIs killed in that time. And, you know, we're not going to get any...
And nobody got held responsible for that, you know?
No, they didn't. And, you know, unfortunately, probably nobody's going to be... Well, I hope somebody's held accountable for this. I hope a lot of people are. But, it's not going to be any different if we get out in 3 years or if we get out in a month. It's not going to be any different. There is a civil war. The civil war will continue. You know, the only thing be different is they're not going to have a bunch of American referees.
Yeah, they're just going to have to go after. And frankly, we don't. That's one of the assumptions that may not even be valid too, Wayne. We don't really have the ability to tell how much of the violence in Iraq is directly and proximately caused by our presence there.
I would say a great majority of.
Well, I would too.
If
you're seen collaborating with the Americans, you get dead.
Right. It would be the same thing here if the Canadians decided that they were going to invade to straighten up our country.
Right.
The same thing. The same exact thing.
Canadians become the enemy.
Exactly. And and the big fear of Iran. I mean, what's the statistic in Iran? Something like 80% of the population's under 26 or something?
Yeah, really high.
Yeah, really high. You know, those kids are going to take care of that.
Kids want a pair of blue jeans.
Yes, they do. And they want all this silly stuff to stop. I mean, you know.
Yeah, they'd like to be able to block. They'd like to be able to hold hands walking down the street.
Right. Ahmadinejad and all his people got it handed it to him in these last elections they had. If you want to do something in Iran, encourage these people, support these people, these young people, to bring about change. Don't invade. Don't drop nuclear bombs. I don't know.
The latest conservative yapping on Iran is that, well, we learned, George Bush is, it always starts, George Bush is no conservative. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, because he's a liberal. But we learned our lesson in Iraq. This time we won't invade with ground troops, we'll just bomb them.
That's a real good plan. What do you think?
What would you do on a job site if a guy came to you and was that stupid? I mean, would you let him near the power tools?
I'd fire his ass. That's what I would do.
Don't let these idiots near the things that go boom.
No, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. We'll find a place with you where you can't help hurt yourself or anyone else.
Straight jacket, soft wall, purple crayon between the toes, and have a nice time.
Yeah, right. I don't know. But, Peter's got the right idea, and I encourage more people to do exactly what he's doing because the people have the power to change this. And,
Wayne, why can't the Democratic leadership understand that as long as they continue funding this war, they are setting up a Democratic president for a one-term failure?
Well, because, just like Bob calls them, a lot of them are Democrats in name only.
Yeah.
A lot of them are profiting from this war also with their stocks and their,
And their blind trusts and,
And all the, exactly. It's just crazy. It's crazy. And they have, but one thing they want, you have to remember, these representatives and these senators want more than anything else is to be reelected. And if the people let them know that if they don't cut off the funding, if they don't end this thing, they're not going to be reelected. That will get their attention. And, you know, I don't care if you call yourself a Democrat or Republican or what. You will not be reelected. We will not back you. We will fight against you.
And we are looking for a primary opponent for you right now.
Exactly. Exactly. So, anyway.
Seems reasonable to me, Wayne.
That's my little 2 cents worth, but Merry Christmas to Peter out there and everybody else, for that matter. And hopefully the new year, you know, we're going to have control. You know, the people that call themselves Democrats and progressives are going to have control. But the only way to get things done is to hold these people's feet to the fire.
Yeah.
If you're not really a Democrat, if you're not progressive, and you're not going to do what we ask you to do, then by God, we're going to replace you with somebody that will.
Yeah.
Just that simple.
Start the emails now.
Now.
Let them get to work on the 2nd or the 4th or whenever it is they show up, and let them, you know, hey, boss, you got a bunch of emails from people who say you got to defund the war.
Remember, you know, I mean, besides the presidential campaign, remember, you know, all these other campaigns are going to kick off just about a year from now.
Yeah, they are. Well, they're kicking off. No, where the House is concerned, it's a perpetual campaign because
yes,
it's a 2-year cycle.
That's something else that has to be changed, too.
But so that means pressure is especially useful on the House. You know, and of course, with Dennis Kucinich being in the House, maybe that's where we apply the greatest pressure, because after all, constitutionally, the purse strings are controlled by the House.
Yes, they are.
You know, the Senate gets all the fun, you know, all the high-toned, highbrow, hoity-toity. We're going to confirm a Supreme Court justice. Look at us. We get to ratify the treaties. But the framers of the Constitution gave the money to the House. So. That's where we start our effort.
Well,
and yet, let them walk in the door. I've never seen so many emails. There's a bunch of pissed off liberals that want the war over.
Yeah. What are we going to do? Cut off the funding. That's how it ends. You know.
Yeah, because all the other things that we want to happen in America can't happen until the war's defunded, Wayne.
No, it can't.
We can't have universal health care. We cannot have universal daycare. We can't start working on the roads and the bridges and school lunch programs and making sure that everybody on food stamps has enough to eat. We can't do any of that. We can't finish the rebuilding of along the Gulf Coast.
Just think of, you know, if we weren't funding this war, And we did a concentrated effort on rebuilding our infrastructure and passed the Employees Free Choice Act and paid all of these people to work on all these projects at prevailing wage. And they had a union. And along with that union would go retirement benefits and health care, not just for them and their families. You know, like I've said many times,
well,
if
yeah,
you take care of the working people, you'd be amazed at the amount of problems that seem to somehow...
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things, we've talked about the $53.4 million Christmas bonus that the head man over at Goldman Sachs got. You know, union people have real pensions.
Yes, they do have real pensions.
They're not forced involuntarily in by virtue of some 401k plan into the stock market so that dude can get a $53.4 million Christmas bonus.
That's, oh my God. That's,
yeah, I mean, I know. That $53.4 million and the words Christmas bonus. What's his salary?
Well, I read something today, too. One of the heirs to the Walmart fortune, a woman, is out shopping and buys a $68 million painting.
Huh?
A painting.
You know, maybe.
Listen, these are people that deny health care to their employees.
You know, maybe.
You
maybe
know
we
what the picture of the painting is?
I'm afraid to ask.
A doctor taking care of a young child. $68 million. I don't
and
know
it's at, yeah, and it's a Walton heir, and it's probably in velvet.
Yeah. Right.
With Elvis standing in the background.
$68 million.
Jesus.
And the majority of their employees don't have
health care. Well, you know, maybe that's the point. Maybe we got to stop. How do we do it, Wayne? How do we stop measuring these excesses in money? Let's quit talking about $68 million paintings. Let's talk it was a painting worth 120,000 workers.
Right. Exactly.
You know, the Walmart Air went out today and bought a 150,000 worker painting.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes real. Dear, you know, this is the stuff that God, I even hate saying. This is the stuff that breeds revolutions and really ugly things, and none of us want that. But Lord, what do you do with somebody? But this is nothing new. $68 million painting here, $15,000 umbrella stand there, $10,000 shower curtain on the other side.
Right.
$5 million Jimmy Buffett birthday party on a Mediterranean island.
How do these people justify these things?
Well, that's the point. The Christmas bonus, Wayne, was $54 million. What is this sucker's salary? Because the bonus is never bigger than the salary.
I really don't know.
And he gets it for doing nothing. The guy probably can't change his own oil in his car.
Oh, he gets it for doing something, screwing over people. I mean, you know, well, all these people, all these 401Ks, all these poor people that are invested in things that they don't even know because their 401Ks are spread out all over the world and all that jazz. I lost my train of thought.
No, but I think I know where you were going, though. The 401Ks are in play so that this guy can get a...
That's exactly what I was saying. You know, when the stock market goes down, who loses? Not the broker. The poor schmuck's 401K, that's what...
Yeah, because he's not playing with his own money.
No, he isn't. He's playing with somebody else's, and he still gets his... their commission and their bonuses, and you know,
well,
I mean, you know, look at all the people in Enron that lost everything,
right? And let's not forget that. I'm finding out that his salary is $600,000 a year. So thank you, Ray Hinckley. So he got $54 million on a $600,000 salary. But do you remember after 9/11, we found out that a whole bunch of brokerages got filthy, stinking rich on selling short on some airlines.
Yeah. Puts.
Yeah,
that's what they call them?
Yeah, put options.
Yeah.
And
isn't that amazing how that, and, you know, I mean, those things were up, I forget how many hundreds of percent.
I mean, but what a racket. You can lose money and still make it?
Right, but, you know, my point is somebody must have knew something.
Well, it kind of, yeah.
Put all these options on before the event. Isn't that amazing? And that story, you know. I mean, I read that story within a week of the 9/11 tragedy. But boy, it disappeared pretty quick.
Yep. Gone. Well, it's whether it's the employee free choice, defund the war. I don't know. We've debated a lot about what comes first. I just about think that has to come first, Wayne. Because
have, you know,
nothing else can happen until the war is defunded.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
We can't even start talking about balancing the budget and straightening up the financial nightmare that George Bush has created until we defund the war.
Well, you know, wait. You defund a war and then tell them, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to invest, you know, I don't know, $1 trillion in infrastructure. Oh, we can't afford that.
Yeah, but we could darn sure afford spending that on bombs.
Exactly.
We got it for bombs, but we ain't got it for butter.
There you go.
Jesus.
There you go.
Well, happy Christmas to you, Wayne.
And same to you, my good man, and everybody listening, and all the people on the board. So, have a good one, pal. I'll be talking to you.
All right, see ya.
All right, man.
Later. And Jim had a second thought for us. Hey, Jim, welcome back.
Hey, how are you?
We're doing good. Having some good conversation.
Yes, I listened to it, and I have interesting views of my own. Not so interesting to some people, interesting to me. But where do I start? Number one, as far as concentration camps are concerned, I guess they got started in places like Andersonville.
Yep.
Created by the Confederacy. and also in South Africa that were created by the British.
True.
For the Boer War.
That is the very genesis of the concentration camp, the Boer War, isn't it?
Hitler himself said that's where he got his ideas from the British.
Right.
And as far as military is concerned, I still have to tell you that its function is not to practice democracy. It is to protect it. And a soldier cannot choose where he wants to fight.
Oh, I understand that, but we can this idea of being told that anything going on in Iraq is in any way in defense of this nation is just hooey.
And as far as what is happening in this country now, we have had experiences with rounding up people before, but as of yet, we have not been issued any night and fog or decree or any Sitzenhausen decree, which means literally the arrest and apprehension of him because the soldier failed to do his duty. I think we have to look at it from a number of viewpoints historically. And I can end what I have to say because I know you have other agenda on your program. I think it was Churchill once said, he was talking about communism and various forms of socialism. He said, any man in his youth who has not had an infatuation with communism is a fool. But any man in his old age who still continues to have that infatuation is an idiot.
Well, I can... he went back and forth, Churchill did, in his political leanings over the entire course of his career.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Started out a Tory like his daddy, slid slowly to the left, and then slid slowly back to the right. He was a great man and a great political opportunist.
Absolutely, and was one of the greatest leaders in world history who helped preserve his nation in a time of absolute desperation when Adolf Hitler was almost able to completely establish hegemony over the European heartland as well as Great Britain. Didn't happen, but I mean, there are so many things that you can say and so many points of view that can be reviewed, and I think we have to take a look at all of them. And that's simply my position there. And, there are some things that I've heard tonight that I agree with. There are some things that I've heard tonight that I don't agree with.
No, that's going to be par for the course on this program. That's why we don't do the right wing stuff. It has to be an echo chamber. Everybody has to agree with the host on right wing radio.
Right. Absolutely. But I mean, I'm simply pointing out the fact that these things are not going to last forever. And
no, but where the war in Iraq is concerned, the sooner it ends, the better, Jim.
Well, I understand that, but I mean, all wars are contrived by men, and they're fought by men, and they cause great losses in life and humanity on all sides, whether they're in uniform or not. But the main thing is rather to hopefully try to learn something from the lessons of history and to not repeat as many of the bad mistakes as we have seen. I mean, if you read Alexander Solzhenitsyn, for example, if you read One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, or if you read Cancer Ward, or if you read the Gulag Archipelago, we still don't have those things in this country.
Yet.
We are not approaching that, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. I don't think that is going to happen.
Well, what is it, Jim, when you imprison little children?
Well, I don't know.
Entire families.
I don't know the exact particular details of what you're referencing, and I can't speak to the authority.
It's a privatized, it is what I described it as. It is a privatized immigrant detention facility. Entire families locked up behind razor wire. Their clothing taken away and replaced with jail uniforms.
Well,
even the children. The children get 1 hour of education a day.
Why are these immigrants here?
Why are they here? To work. The same reason immigrants go anywhere.
And, of course, what supported this migration of people? It was CAFTA, NAFTA, things of that nature.
Sure.
I'm just pointing out the facts, my friend.
Oh, I understand, but...
go on.
Yeah, we have allowed habeas corpus to be taken from us in the torture bill. It has been demonstrated time and again that torture bill, that habeas corpus excision, if you will, can be used against American citizens. It is being used against American citizens. Jose Padilla is an American citizen, Jim, and they can't even take him to the dentist without temporarily blinding and deafening him. No kidding.
Well, was the blindfold and earmuffs?
No, it was like welder's goggles that were completely blacked out and sound-canceling headphones.
I mean, but they're not destroying the man's sight of hearing, are they?
They've destroyed the man entirely and utterly. Testimony was had in court a couple of weeks ago that he is so mentally destroyed that he cannot any longer even assist in his own defense. He can't tell what reality is from fantasy anymore.
Well, I think there are a lot of people besides Jose Padilla who fall into that category.
But it happened to Jose Padilla as a direct result of what was done to him.
In my opinion, you know, there are a lot of people who have...
But he's an American citizen, and he does not even have recourse, according to the latest... The latest legal opinions out of the Justice Department and out of the court system, he does not have recourse.
Yes, but these things historically have never been permanent. They weren't permanent under Lincoln.
But their lack of permanence does not...
Under Roosevelt and Truman.
But, Jim, their lack of permanence doesn't negate the harm that is done in the immediate, in the immediate moment.
Unfortunately, my friend, history can be very cruel. And a lot of times, unfortunately, people are allowed to fall through the cracks. And unfortunately, they are, as Boris Pasternak put in Dr. Zhivago, they have become nameless numbers on lists that have been careless and misplaced. But all we can do
is fight against it.
Is to try to, in addition to that, instead of laughing and making fun, is to take these things seriously and to, in a very cogent and very serious manner, to try to ameliorate these conditions and to correct them. That's all we can do. That's where we are today.
That's the advocacy that this community we've created tries to engage in. I wonder how many members of Congress know about this camp. And others like it.
Well, I'm sure they are going to be well informed. I would hope that they are. And I will point out to you that ours is not a perfect system of government. There are many flaws in it. And there are many things that need to be corrected. And there are those people who would like to destroy it entirely.
I mean, it's disturbing.
People who would like to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I don't think the solution is there.
I want constitutional government back, Jim. I want Article 1, Section 9 to actually mean something again.
Well, there have been times in our history when it has not meant a great deal. And then there are times in our history when that has been reversed and it has been corrected.
Well, that's true. And in the instance of Lincoln's suspension of habeas corpus, Wilson's attacks on civil liberties and habeas corpus, and even Truman's attacks on habeas corpus, Article 1, Section 9 says that habeas corpus... Agnes, please?
Sorry.
Thank you, dear. Habeas corpus shall not be suspended except in times of rebellion and invasion. Well, the Civil War was considered a rebellion. We were at war in the First World War, and we were at war in the Second World War.
And like it or not, my friend, unfortunately, we're at war now.
No, we're not. Those were all declared wars.
Well...
Congress has yet to declare war on Afghanistan, Iraq, or anybody else.
I understand that, but unfortunately, whether it's declared or not, the effect is very similar, is it not, sir?
But there is no invasion and there is no rebellion.
Yeah.
The Constitution is very clear.
But like I said before, It doesn't have to be declared for the effect to be justified.
I understand your point. However, please understand mine.
I do.
Rebellion or invasion. And there's no colorable claim that any supporter of this suspension of habeas corpus can make that either of those two situations obtain.
Well understood, but as I said before,
So for our part, we will advocate, and we will email, and we will call, and we will agitate and irritate our elected representatives because they do pay attention to that sort of thing.
And thus, I hope the pendulum can swing back the other way.
Well, we hope to give the pendulum a push.
The laws of physics do apply. But, you know, I do point out just historical examples as you have yourself.
Indeed. And one would hope that we learn from history and do not repeat history's mistakes, as George Santayana pointed out. Jim, thank you very kindly.
Good night, sir.
Have a good one. The question becomes one of your willingness to act, isn't it? It will not change. The 13 mugwump Democrats in the Senate will not back off on their cowardly vote that enabled the torture bill if you don't act. Instead of the T. Don Hutto Residential Center in Taylor, Texas, they will spring up like crabgrass all over America if you don't act. If you want to read about this, by the way, Latina Lista, LatinaLista, LatinaLista.blogspot.com. Privatized immigrant detention facilities for families revealed to be modern-day concentration camps. What is the world like for a two-year-old whose rising consciousness and first remembered images are of barbed wire pointed at them? What is that America like for them? Well, having mentioned some kids, we've got a studio full of them. It's that time. As such, we will start. Well, we will start with the eldest first and go in that order. The first voice that you hear will be that of Margaret. Mama, would you raise her microphone standard up so there we go? Talk right into it. Get up close to it, dear.
Now the birth of Jesus.
Okay, this being the Christmas story. The Christmas story from the book of Matthew and Luke. Margaret first.
Now the birth of Jesus Christ was as follows. After his mother Mary was betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, she was found with child of the Holy Spirit. Then Joseph, her husband, being a just man and not wanting to make her a public example, was minded to put her away secretly. But while he thought about these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take you, Mary, your wife, for which is conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit, and she will bring forth a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. So all this was done that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet, saying, Behold, the virgin shall be with child and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which is translated God with us. Then Joseph, being aroused from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord commanded him, and took to him his wife, and did not know her till she had brought forth her firstborn son, and he called his name Jesus. Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men of the east came to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he who has been born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and have come to worship him. Then Herod the king, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he inquired all of them to where the Christ was born. So they said to him, In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Then Herod, when he had secretly called the wise men, determined from them what time the star appeared, and he sent them to Bethlehem and said, Go and search carefully for the young child, and when you have found him, bring back word to me that I may come and worship him also. When they heard the king, they departed, and behold, the star which they had seen in the east went before them till came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. And when they came into the house, they saw the young child with Mary and his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented gifts to him, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Then, being divinely warned in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed for their own country another way.
The next voice that you hear will be Ferguson.
And it came to pass in those days that a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. This scene first took place while Quirinus was governing Syria. So all went to be registered, everyone to his own city. Joseph also went up from Galilee out to the city of Nazareth, into Judah, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because of what the house and lineage of David, to the registered with Mary, his betrothed wife, who was with child. So it was that while they were there, the days were completed for her to be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling cloths, and laid him in the manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. Now they were in the same country, shepherds living out in the fields, keeping watch over their flock by night. And behold, an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were gratefully afraid. Then the angel said to them, Do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you the tidings of great joy, which will to be all people. For there is born to you this day in the city of David a Savior who is Christ our Lord, and this will be the sign to you. You will find a babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill towards men.
Next up, Doodle.
So it was when the angels had gone away from them into heaven that the shepherds said to one another, Let us now go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has come to pass, which the Lord has made known to us. And they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph, the baby lying in a manger. Now when they had seen him, they made widely known the saying which was told them concerning... Concerning this child. And all of those who heard it marveled at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart.
Well, that's 2 years we've done that.
Very nice, children.
Nicely done, little Kincaidkins. Little golf clap. Merry Christmas to you all. And to all. All right. Yeah, something more?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Merry Christmas!
And a Happy New Year!
No, that's not my son. Look, we're at the top of the hour. We're going to do an extra hour. We're going to do one more hour tonight just for the fun of it. So we will go to the top of the hour news, and we'll come back to your phone calls, your thoughts at 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you can't get to a phone or you're entirely too shy to try... bob@headonradio.com is the email address. You're listening to the Christmas presentation of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Tomorrow, an early morning meeting at Camp David between Defense Secretary Robert Gates, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley. President Bush is expected to hear their ideas on new strategy in Iraq. Defense Secretary Gates concludes.